moment a man who needs no introduction. He is known and studied worldwide. He is a legend in his own time, Zachariah Sitchin, who, by the way, has some breaking news, an exclusive for us tonight that he'll be telling us about. As I speak to you, the Desert Devil winds are blowing. It's 40 miles per hour plus out there. The winds are howling across the desert. So think about that wherever you are. You probably have better weather than we do. I would like to welcome a new affiliate once again, KRKY. Yet another one in Dillon, Colorado, 930 on the dial. KRKY, Dillon, Colorado, 930 on the dial. Hello there, M.R. Murray. He's GMPD there. Thank you. Thank you very much. Nice to be on the air in Dillon. You have no idea what you're in for. You're about to find out. Remember, stations, we do pre-feeds 3 hours prior to the start of the live show. We do 3 hours of pre-feeds from the previous night. Well, going all the way back east where it's late. We've only got an hour with Zachariah Sitchin, so you know who he is. The world knows who he is. You know about what he thinks about the Anunnaki. And I think you know that he does all this, and this is why people listen to Zachariah, not because he pulls his information from the cosmic behind, but because he pulls his information from ancient knowledge, ancient writings. So what he has to say really counts. I suggest you listen very closely. Zachariah, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning to you.
It's good to be on the program again with you.
Yes, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Well, at the right moment, we somehow managed to get together.
Yeah.
And there are really many exciting things to talk about tonight.
Okay. I think that people understand, well, maybe they don't, your theory about the Anunnaki, and I suppose that can be briefly stated, but ancient knowledge, this, what you say to these people tonight, whenever you're on, doesn't come from just nowhere. It comes from translations and ancient knowledge, doesn't it?
Yes.
So, talk a little bit about where you get all of this information.
As I may remind your listeners, I'm sure many of them are familiar with my writings. My first book, The 12th Planet, was published exactly a quarter of a century ago, and based entirely on the writings, first of all, of the Sumerians, who wrote on clay tablets beginning some 6,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
then about the evidence left behind by the subsequent civilizations of the ancient Near East, the Hittites, the Egyptians, etc., and combining all that with the Bible, the Old Testament, and especially the book of Genesis, what I have found was that what others consider, know about, but consider as myths, as mythology, was really the recording of highly sophisticated knowledge that in a nutshell told us the following. That soon after our solar system was created, it was invaded by a planet that was thrust out of its own solar system, was passing near ours, was drawn into the center of our solar system, had a collision with an existing olden planet in our solar system. As a result of that collision, three things happened. The Earth and the Moon came into being, the asteroid belt came into being, and the invading planet got caught into a vast elliptical orbit around our Sun, coming to our vicinity about every 3,600 years, and becoming thus the 10th planet, or as the ancients called it, the 12th member of the solar system, because they counted Sun, Moon, and 10 planets.
When it does come back, Zachariah, when it does come back, how close does it come to Earth?
Between Mars and Jupiter.
Between Mars and Jupiter?
Yes.
That should be quite something.
That's pretty close.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And according to those tales, that planet coming from some other solar system in the cosmos, brought into ours and transmitted to what we call the planet Earth, the seed of life that we nowadays call DNA. Now, that happened billions of years ago. About 450,000 years ago, intelligent beings from that planet traveled in space, arrived on our planet in search of gold, at some point needing assistance, needing manpower, jumped the gun on evolution and took the hominids who had already evolved on Earth and, combining their genes with those of the hominids, brought about some 300,000 years ago as Homo sapiens. This is the essence of the story.
We were created to mine gold for...
To mine gold.
Yeah,
but in time, they gave us civilization, and if you check it, you see that the stages of our advancement happened in about 600 years.
Now, I wonder if that accounts, Zachariah, for why when we touch gold and feel gold and think about gold, especially if you just touch it, put gold in your hand, you're feeling something more than just something valuable. There's something, I don't know, there's something about gold.
Well, this infatuation with gold is really inexplicable unless you accept the ancient tale. The people in the Americas refer to gold as the tears of the gods, and so on. Now, against that background, Art, here I'm sitting a few weeks ago and reading the two parallel reports by the two teams that have deciphered the human genome.
They just deciphered the genome,
yeah,
I think, in middle February.
A few weeks ago.
And they did it way ahead of time. They said, wow, we really got done fast, much faster than
well,
we thought.
Well, we welcome that, of course. And they said that the human genome has about 30,000 genes, has about 3 billion letters of the DNA alphabet, but they are lumped into effective genes only about 30,000.
And they thought there were a whole lot more, didn't they?
They did, but...
Nay.
They did. Thousand.
You really got done fast, much faster than
well,
we thought.
We welcome that, of course. And they said that the human genome has about 30,000 genes, has about 3 billion letters of the DNA alphabet, but they are lumped into effective genes only about 30,000.
And they thought there were a whole lot...
But 30,000 is pretty complex. Then they found out two things, one that was highlighted in all the headlines and one that you found hidden only and discovered only when you read the reports very carefully. The major finding was that the findings are humbling because they discovered that we are no different from chimpanzees by no more than 1% of the genes. In other words,
awfully close.
We have 30,000, so about 300 of them make the difference between us and chimpanzees. We have barely twice as many genes as the fruit fly or some worm, etc.
Twice as many as a worm?
About twice, yes.
Yeah.
And that they found and they really traced how the DNA that somehow arrived on Earth, and more they say through a comet, something from outer space brought it, which is corroboration of the ancient tale, and then how it grew through bacteria and invertebrates, like a tree of life, showing how we arrived with all the things we are proud of.
So then bacteria then had some job in the formulation of our present genetic structure.
Right.
Present genetic structure.
Now here comes the sleeper. they found out that as they trace the genetic development on Earth from the lowly bacteria to the intelligent human beings, there are 223 precisely genes that cannot be accounted for through this progression from bacteria to invertebrates to vertebrates. And none other than the science editor of Newsweek referred to those genes as alien genes.
Alien genes?
Alien
two,
genes.
Okay, so...
That's in Newsweek.
So now they've completed the whole genetic... it was amazing they did it so quickly in mid-February. This
well,
is really important
years,
for the audience to understand.
Yeah.
It took a few years. Not as many as they thought, so we're simpler than they thought.
Right.
And then after everything is said and done, there's 223 genes that...
that cannot be accounted for through this evolutionary process.
Alien
when I
genes.
Read that word, alien genes, I said to myself, I'd better contact that science editor and everybody else. And the way to do that was to put the story on my website, which people, by the way, are welcome to look up. It's sitchin.com.
Yeah, we've got a link.
And I said, and I called it the case of Adam's alien genes. Now, if you ask those scientific groups, how did we get those mysterious or unexplained genes, they say, well, at some point, maybe a group of bacteria gave it to us.
In other words, they don't know.
Well, the Bible says that at some point, the group, the entity, the divine beings that the Bible calls Elohim, which is a plural word in Hebrew, should be translated gods, but usually translated God with a capital G, that they talked to each other and said, let us fashion the Adam in our image and after our likeness.
That's right.
Now, if the difference between us and chimpanzees is caused by bacteria, then you must say that it is a group of bacteria that got together and started to talk to each other and said, well, why don't we fashion an intelligent being to look like us? But we don't look like bacteria.
Well, some would say, perhaps, Zachariah, that those bacteria were directed by the hand of God.
Okay. So now we get to what I really want to... I don't know if it's shocking or not, but here it is. On April 8th, which is what, about 11 days ago, the New York Times carried an article on its front page, headlined, Evolutionists Battle New Theory on Creation. And the article said that the so-called creationists, who, you know, disagree with the pure evolution, are up to some new tricks. First of all, they are not those Bible Belt guys. They are all scientists. And what they say is, well, yes, there was evolution, but at some point somebody interfered and this, the intelligent designer.
The intelligent designer.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And the whole new theory about which those who believe in evolution complain, because now it's scientists who say that, is called the intelligent design theory. Now, listen carefully, please. The fifth paragraph in the New York Times, and I'm reading from my copy, which is late city edition of April 8th, says as follows. This designer, you know, the intelligent designer, may be much like the biblical God, with the capital G, proponents say. But they are open to other explanations, such as the proposition that life was seeded by a meteorite from elsewhere in the cosmos, or the New Age philosophy that the universe is suffused with a mysterious but inanimate life force. Now, the same story was carried on the web of the New York Times and must be the original early version. I have that in front of me as well. And to the fifth paragraph in the website says as follows. This designer may be much like the biblical God, proponents said, but they are open to other explanations, such as the proposition that life was seeded by a meteorite from elsewhere in the cosmos, possibly involving extraterrestrial intelligence. Or the New Age philosophy that the universe is suffused by a mysterious universe. Now, did you catch the difference?
Oh, yes, of course I did.
The words possibly involving extraterrestrial intelligence were excised
By
whoever in the late City edition of the New York Times.
Who would you imagine applied the pressure that made those words disappear, Zachariah?
Well, frankly, I have no idea. But I think, you know, sometimes they say that one has to read between the lines, but in this case, one has to read the lines.
Oh, yes. Well, or try to imagine the missing lines. That's a riot. That's an absolute... So,
well, now I this is the first time, by the way, Art, I mention it to anybody.
Well, now, Zachariah,
you and your listeners have this...
The story, Zachariah, it is a scoop. And, you know, though, we have to say, let's think, what are the odds that... Oh, you know, it was just a typo. In other words, somehow in that printing, it got mixed up and forgot that sentence.
I didn't know that you're so generous.
I'm not. I'm just sort of. No. I'm trying to get the listeners out there to understand how unlikely it is that incredibly important sentence would simply. Just be there in the first place and then disappear in the second place. We can imagine all kinds of things about who got behind its disappearance. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So I'm sure
whoever excised it is another matter. The point is that in the original version of this article on the front page of the New York Times, whoever wrote it and whoever accepted it in its original version actually accepted everything that I say the Sumerian said 6,000 years ago.
Of course.
And to me, this is so exciting and sensational that, I really don't sleep nights, Art, because I'm so overwhelmed by all these discoveries. Now, this is in genetics. Now, a day before the New York Times article, there is an article in a magazine called Science News reporting the findings of a French observatory that has been working, by the way, to my knowledge. I've tried to contact them from time to time about the search for what they call Planet X, meaning the 10th and the unknown.
Yes.
And they say, here's the opening paragraph in that report, far beyond the solar system's 9 known planets, a body as massive as Mars may once have been part of our system, and it might still be there.
You know, I read the same story. Are you, Zachariah? Yes, I know. I read exactly the same story, and when I read it, I thought of you. Actually, they say that might still be there. Absolutely fascinating. Zachariah, we're at the bottom of the hour, so hold on. That's plenty to digest for one segment. Oh, my. So our genetic makeup is all recorded, duly recorded now. They're done. There's these genes that they can't account, these alien genes is what they're calling them. And then there's that alien exorcism in the New York Times. Oh, my, my, I'm sure Zachariah's smiling. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Take a ride. The phone is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
I don't know if you understand the significance of what you just heard, but I'd call a friend and have him listen to a replay, and I'd certainly be in tune for the next half hour. Then comes Danion Brinkley. I'm Art Bell. Or then you go to my website, as always, www.artbell.com. Go to and tonight's guest info, and you can go to Zachariah's website. You can read about everything he just told you and a whole lot more so that you might understand why he's so excited right now, since science is beginning to underline what he thinks with regard to our origins. No small matter, our origins, right? So science is now underlying everything he's saying, and I'm sure put a big smile on his face, right?
Are you asking me? Are you telling me?
I can hear the smile. Yeah, that's good enough, and you don't get that very often on radio.
People say that I never, whenever they want to take a picture of me at my lectures or seminars, they say, you never smile.
Oh, so the next time someone wants to...
Now I'm smiling.
The next time you want a good picture of Zachariah, you bring a copy of the New York Times with you, and you hold that behind the camera.
That's a good idea.
What do you think, Zachariah, that would happen if the Anunnaki came back? What would there be in their intention be for us now?
Well, I of course pondered that question many times, not only if they come, when they come, etc. Now, we have to go back to, because I keep telling people who come to hear me, and by the way, if I may say this, on my website, any forthcoming lectures or seminars will be listed so people can look it up.
All right.
So they can write to me at my P.O. Box. 577 New York, New York, 10185.
Wait, that's too fast.
New York, 577.
Right.
New York, New York,
10185.
10185. Okay. By the way, I'm so old-fashioned that I answer all my mail.
Do you really?
Every letter.
Imagine a lot of people would write to you just to have a letter from you and have your name.
That's fine, too. I think if people take the time, if they read my books and think about them and take the time to write a letter to me, they're entitled to a response. I really believe, and I keep stressing that the past is the future, you know. Though my writings are rooted really in the Old Testament, but I'm familiar with the New Testament, and especially the book of Revelation, which repeats what the Hebrew prophet had said, that the first things shall be the last things, and the last things are the first things. Alpha.
What do you think that means?
That means that things are cyclical, and what happened in the past will be repeated. And what we know is that in one instance, and that was the great flood, the deluge, according to the Bible, God decided that mankind did not turn out right, was evil, was whatever, and said, we will use the opportunity of this deluge that the earth will be flooded to wipe mankind off the face of the earth. And then 8 verses later, it says that the same God said, well, let me save mankind by telling a guy called Noah to build the ark and to take with him this and do this and do that, and so that life on earth and mankind will not perish.
Yes, except that, of course, there was no admittance to two Nephilim under the ark.
well, So the more detailed tales of the Sumerians on which this biblical tale is based say that there were two leaders. One was named Enlil, meaning Lord of the Command, who was the strict one, and one was Enki, Lord of Earth, who was the chief scientist and was involved in the very genetic engineering which we discussed in the first part of this program. And each time the strict one said mankind is no good, it didn't turn out right, they proliferate too much, they are evil, etc., etc. And I think you will agree with me, Art, that especially in the last century, there was enough evil to justify mankind being punished. The other one, Enki, said, no, these are they are really us, he said. You know, they have our genes. We intermarried with them. Many of their offspring are us. We cannot destroy them. Now, who is the leader now? if it's Enlil, I'm serious.
I know you're serious. You're talking about if they come back.
If he is the leader, and he leads the group that you know pays us the next visit, and he may say, I told you so. They are evil. They are no good. Let's be done with them. If it's Enki, he may say, well, you know, some are bad, some are good, but after all, they are our creations. We are responsible for them. We gave them civilization. If they know how to use nuclear weapons, we taught them, because we the Anunnaki used nuclear weapons in the fights between us around 4,000 years ago. So now mankind also knows how to do it. So I really don't know who the leader is, and it may go either way.
You know, Zachariah, it's a little like being a Palestinian and watching for the next Israeli election, huh? Understand what I mean? In other words, you got it.
You can think of many examples, but who knows? I really don't know.
That's a particularly good one, though. Of course, Palestinians right now are finding out the last election was probably the guys who would have erased Earth. Anyway.
Well,
Without
getting into politics, they didn't take the best offer that was given to them, so.
But the point is, we have to, could one presume that there's been a continuing spiritual evolution for even the Anunnaki, politically and socially, in all this time, and as we are evolving spiritually, and that perhaps they would be kind to us?
Could be. Well, you know, if you really trace, as you know, Art, from that very first book that was really the cornerstone, the 12th planet, there are 8 by now, the latest being the Cosmic Code, which really deals with the encoded messages in the biblical text. And I point out there that the way we run on our computer digitally is the way the code is in the Bible, because the letters are really representing numbers. So there is definitely been an evolution among them too. First of all, because those who were here represented several generations. There were those who originally just came from their planet, and many went back, some stayed. Then they had children and offspring. Then there was the intermarriage before the deluge. Then there were other so-called demigods. The second book that I wrote, The Stairway to Heaven, deals with the search for immortality. The so-called demigods, be it Sumerian or Egyptian, believe that they are entitled to the longevity of the so-called gods, with a small g. So there were many, they were not uniform. You're quite right in renting their debt out.
Zachariah, wouldn't this be an important consideration? Now that we have unraveled the human genome, wouldn't it be a sort of a race to see if we could begin manipulating our own genetic code before the Anunnaki return, huh?
Well, first of all, I want to say that as far as cloning is concerned, that what we can do, we will do. No, Lord, nobody will stop us.
Yeah, but forget clones for a second. Think about just manipulation of our genetic. In other words, if we were originally designed by the Anunnaki as gold miners, then they would have designed our genetics so that we weren't as smart as we might be. We use 10% of our brain, I'm told. So
right.
If we're able to manipulate our own genetic code, by the time they get back, we could be, well, a whole new species.
And then?
And then we could meet them on their own ground.
Well, aren't we trying to do that already by trying to get to Mars? And each time we get frustrated there?
Well, we have a new mission on the way now, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, it'll take us, what, 2-3 years to get there. But Mars is really the best example to point to and to discuss the issue that you just raised. Because there's absolutely clear photographic and other evidence that there are remains of artificial structures on Mars.
Oh, you have seen the new photographs?
Yeah, I've seen the new photographs. And
have you been hearing what Sir Arthur Clarke has been saying?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And Tom von Schlanden and others. And Mars not only had little water, had actual seas and lakes, and had an atmosphere and was habitable.
That's right.
And the question is, you know, even those like Arthur Clarke or Tom von Schlanden or others who are on the establishment side of the fence, say, look, these are not artificial structures. This is these are not natural structures. These are artificial. These are man-made, etc.
That's right.
They all stop at some threshold. And the question is, so if they are not natural, who built them? Who erected them?
Yes, of course.
And everyone, and this goes to the same article in the New York Times, everyone, when they see the word extraterrestrial, they get frightened.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I don't know, but here's an even better question. If we really do go to Mars, or our next probe finds evidence, absolute evidence of life, large life, as Sir Arthur Clarke said, perhaps even old life, it doesn't matter,
yes,
it's going to be very important news, and will it get into the same New York Times that removed a sentence about aliens? In other words, would we be told?
Well, you and I know that so much is already known and is not being told. I've tried to, for example, in my book Genesis Revisited, I discussed the existence at that time, hardly known, now maybe more people know about it, that after some discoveries made in 1983 and the meetings between President Reagan and Gorbachev, a international commission was established under the Austrian State Department, but including representatives from all major powers, and its mission, as expressed in a document called the Declaration of Principles, was how to delay for 48 hours the news that a contact has been made with an alien intelligence.
48 hours.
Now, you know, if you ask, you know, the officialdom, and they say, is there another intelligence in the universe, they say, well, probably yes, but, you know, with so many billions of stars and planets and galaxies and all that. But this is light years away, you know. The chance of communication is nil. Now, if this is so, what is the point in delaying the news for 48 hours?
That's a very good point, and I'm trying to...
And I give in my book, Genesis Revisited, the text of that summary document signed by all those concerned a few years ago.
Gee, what would you do with 48 hours if you had it? Anyway, I can't think what you would do. Maybe you'd get the military out in the streets. I don't know. That'd be about the best you could do.
I know what they would do. I know what they would do.
What would they do?
They would call Art Bell and say, can we be on your next program? That's why they need 48 hours.
I could schedule faster than that.
Well.
If I have to.
I mean, the only way is really to treat it as a joke, right? Because nobody can be serious and say, if an alien intelligence, you know, not beings, God forbid, but an intelligence, you know, like a stone that can think and contacted us,
yeah.
we should delay the news for 48 hours.
48 hours. I've interviewed the people who run SETI many times, and they have always denied that there would be any delay at all. And I've gone round and round and round with them about that. Now, listen, I want to ask you, Zachariah, before we run out of time, did you pick up the telephone and call up the New York Times and say, hey, guys, what happened to that sentence?
No.
You didn't?
No. First of all, I'll tell you the truth. When I saw that, when I read it for the first time, when I read the release of their website was the first thing I read.
Right.
And I saw this extraterrestrial, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, on the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah.
And then others called me and said, hey, did you see that? They say, maybe it's even an extraterrestrial intelligence that is the so-called the great designer, etc. And then when I arranged the papers, the document, I mean, there's so much more to talk about, so I'll have to do it another time. All the papers in this, including the front page. And I'm looking for that sentence, and I don't see it.
Right.
To myself, what, did I imagine it? What about all those who called me about it? And then I read word for word, comparing paragraph 5, and I see that on the front page, the city, late city edition, it just continues as if those words possibly involving extraterrestrial intelligence were never in the text. So this revelation came to me as I was preparing for this interview with you.
Tonight, that fast, huh? My. Well, so they even had time to call them up.
I don't think I'll call them up because,
Well, some of my listeners will.
That's up to them, but... But I suggest that they look up the New York Times website from April 8, 2001.
Yeah. And then compare it to
and
the...
And then compare paragraph 5 to the later... But some people who called me had the edition of the New York Times, which had those crucial words.
So it was between editions that these words just somehow disappeared.
Well, somebody must have read it and said, hey, fellows, you know.
The biggest contiguous typo in New York Times printing history.
Maybe there'll be a correction. I don't know.
Well, at the very least, if you don't call, I guarantee you a lot of my listeners will. Zachariah Sitchin, as always, it is an incredible pleasure to have you here. And every time you're here for 1 hour, I always say, hey, Zachariah, how come I always only get 1 hour? And you always say, oh, Art, next time we'll have more time.
No, well, you know, there is the time difference. Now it's already 2 a.m. in New York.
Well,
and,
say the words anyway.
And I'm not as young as you are.
I know, but say the words anyway. Say sometime Art will do a longer show.
Sometime Art will do a longer show.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Zachariah. Well, that was something. That was really something, folks. We invite you to do your own comparison with regard to what the New York Times did. As always, think for yourself. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast.
This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
If for any reason at all you missed the last hour with Zachariah Sitchin, find a computer and go listen to it. That's all I can say about Zachariah Sitchin. It was an incredible hour, and we've got incredible hours coming up. You're about to speak with a man, listen to a man, who was dead. You talk about NDEs. Danion Brinkley was dead for 20 minutes.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
If for any reason at all you missed the last hour with Zachariah Sitchin, find a computer and go listen to it. That's all I can say about Zachariah Sitchin. It was an incredible hour, and we've got incredible hours coming up. You're about to speak with a man, listen to a man, who was dead. You talk about NDEs. Danion Brinkley was dead for 20 minutes. 20 minutes. And he had incredible, incredible experiences. He acquired incredible powers that I know personally to be absolutely real, even annoying at times, but real. And everything that happened to him is real. We're going to tell Danion's story because I know a lot of you may never have heard it. Maybe the person longest dead in the way he was killed to come back. And he's got a lot to say about it. Danion Brinkley, coming up next. Now that sound is most appropriate on every program, but perhaps never more appropriate than as I bring on Danion Brinkley. Dan, hi.
Hi, Art.
How
that
you doing?
Last hour was fabulous, Art.
Wasn't that something with Zachariah?
You know, Zachariah and I both travel with Abbas and Vision. So through the years, I've had a chance to sit and listen to him. And to see the thrill about how Zachariah has looked at this through the years and to have that kind of endorsement. And it makes more sense than anything else we've ever heard.
I just got a fast blast from David in Berkeley, California, who just went and checked what Zachariah said. And he says, I just checked the New York Times story, and they did have the all-important words, extraterrestrial intelligence exorcised. So already the listeners are checking, and it's true.
But the whole joy of just listening to Zachariah, the analogy that you made of the Palestinians and the Israelis was absolutely brilliant politically also.
Oh,
to compliment you on that, Art. And now that we left out when that final 3,600-year period is coming into play, this planet that they're searching for, and if it's the same as he was talking, like the Mayan calendar, then it fits into a lot of the stuff that were in the boxes of knowledge.
The box. Well, we'll get to the boxes of knowledge. Well, that's kind of rushing the story a little bit. Yeah, you're right, of course. Where are you now? Are you at home?
I'm sitting in Aiken, South Carolina, at the desk in my rocket ship, the chair that I always sit in when I think through and when we're interviewing.
Yeah, all right.
We've been here since 1757.
You mean like your family tree?
Yeah, this house. We built this house. We bought this land in 1757, built the house in 1804.
The whole area is so, I don't know, early America beautiful. I mean, it's just a beautiful place where you live and so very different than where I am here in the desert.
Oh, yeah. And the wind's not blowing. It's like 80 degrees here.
It's 80 there?
Uh-huh.
We're getting 40 miles per hour plus. It's screaming. The devil winds of the desert, I call it. All right. Well,
not lightning.
Yeah. Well, hey, did you like my little, or maybe you didn't like, I don't know, when you hear that sound, does that have a sort of a metal effect on you?
Absolutely it does. There's absolutely no way around it. No way.
All right. So, anyway, growing up, you grew up in South Carolina.
Yep.
And, they, by the way, folks, they did a movie. If you can ever get hold of the movie they did on Dan, you've really got to watch it. Who played you?
Eric Roberts.
Eric Roberts played you in the movie, yeah.
Yeah, and if you see it, if you can get a copy of it in Japanese, this was on the Fox Television Network, Art, and it went probably into 70 countries. It's seen by 100 million people all over the world, and someone sent me a copy of it dubbed in Japanese, and it is... It's really good to watch me speak in Japanese.
Well, for most people, Dan, the thrill wouldn't be there. They'd want to hear the story, and the story is really interesting. I mean, here you are growing up in a real small southern town, and you were... Well, anyway, the movie certainly made you...
Who was I, Art?
You were the town bully.
Absolutely.
The town bully.
Absolutely.
The biggest, baddest.
Tried to be.
Well, I mean, if his portrayal was even half accurate.
Nowhere near.
You were a miserable lump.
Oh, yeah, a complete jerk. I mean, you grow up in South Carolina. You know, we're rolling back now 50 years.
Don't be blaming it on South Carolina.
Well, but you got it. You roll back 50 years. And in 50 years, you know, you grew up and down here 50 years ago, 1950, I'm 50 years old, and this took place 25 years. And in the years before that, you know, down here in the Deep South, the Bible Belt, everybody goes to hell down here, Art. And you never really get a religious kind of perspective that opens up a spiritual place. So sometimes you either fall for it and you're an evil sinner, or sometimes you begin to just really look at the aspects of what religion is. And I never could find too much to it. I tried to understand it earlier, but what I understand is you could talk to them for a few minutes and hope they're going to do right, or you could knock the fire out of them and see to it that they did right. And I developed this from the time I was in the third or fourth or fifth grade. You know, I'm 6'4", weigh 240 pounds, and I learned how to fight, and the way I got attention and the way I had people to pay attention to me was that I was a tough guy. You know, I grew up all the way through that. I grew up, and by the time I played 14 and 15, I played sports, and I really loved to knock the fire out of people and listen to the radio show the next morning.
Yeah, I'm told, actually, that people in your town will still tell stories about what a lout you were.
You've been here and heard them.
Yeah.
I know. You know, but I can't help that. This is who I was, and what I try to bring to the table is in point, you know, being 50 years old, like so many baby boomers, here's just one story. And I started out with no idea about any of this stuff. I wouldn't. You know, you are interesting, Art Bell, but people talk about near-death experiences down here and no one had ever spoken about it, and Art, and you didn't exist in the world of what you now talk about, and Raymond Moody hadn't written the book, and Life After Life, which is now in its 25th year, 1975. I found out sports, and then I found out ballroom brawling, and then I discovered the Marine Corps where you could, you know, they even taught you how to shoot people.
Yeah.
And to get that same release.
And you did.
Oh, absolutely. No problem about it. I mean,
did some pretty dark stuff in the service, didn't you?
Well, after out of the service. I mean, the service was only a training ground to bring you into whatever kind of program that they were working with at that time.
It made you more proficient.
Oh, yeah. It gave me the thrill of a precision of executing where I would overpower an enemy at 600 yards.
Yeah.
You know, it was a wonderful, wonderful thing when the 700 Remington with a 3.9 scope replaced, especially a Douglas bored barrel, replaced the M1D. And sometimes you used a 1903 A4 Springfield as a sniper. But the 700 Remington with that 3.9 Redfield scope brought in a whole new era. How much damage you could do at 800 yards.
At 50 years old, not that I want to bring us forward very long just for a moment, though, but at 50 years old, knowing what you did, how often do you reflect and do you feel guilt? Do you have remorse for all of that now?
Jesus Christ, yes. I have to have remorse. You know, my basic personality, all these near-death experiences just tend to bend it a little. You know, I still have the basic personality, but Art, you couldn't have done what I did. You can't go back and look at it, even without the near-death experiences, as I've matured. You can't go back and not, no matter what you've been through, and see some of the things you did, because I was God have mercy. I mean, I did some things, knowing when we get through what happened in the near-death experience, but I did some stuff that, you know, it was horrible, but it didn't really matter, or was not too bad because of my intent, you know, what I was really doing it for, like protecting. But, you know, in the course of doing that, like anything that does with war or just basic aggressive testosterone or anger or frustration with loss of friends or companions, you did some pretty horrible stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I had the opportunity to spend 4 or 5 years in a lot of places in America, not in the Americas, but in the whole world.
Well, even if you hadn't had the NDEs, although I can't be sure, by the time you get to be our age, and I'm 55,
I'd be dead now.
Well, you start.
I would have never made it back.
Yeah,
now.
But I mean, no matter what happens to you, you begin to reflect on your life and the things that you've done that you're sorry for, and it's just a, you know, kind of a natural process, I guess, as you get older, you begin to do that. But in your case, you had a lot of help. All right, you had a massive NDE. Tell people when and how. Tell that story, please.
Well, when it all began, you're talking about a type A personality, tough guy. I mean, and built his whole life on how much he thought he could intimidate people. And his religion was, you know, whatever anybody hired me to do at that particular time in my life.
That's a religion for some people.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's adrenaline rush, and it's that sense of whatever it is that makes you think you a man and all that kind of garbage.
Yep.
And I was sitting talking on the telephone one evening in 1975, and I was hit in the head by a bolt of lightning. I mean, talking on the telephone.
Hit straight on the head.
Yeah, it came straight, followed the phone line down, and hit me straight just above where the phone receiver was. It went down my neck, then hit my neck, went down my spine, welded the nails of the heels of my shoes to the floor.
Welded the nails right to the floor.
Right, and threw me in the air, suspended me in the air, and slammed me down on the bed.
And you caught fire, right?
Well, they estimated that it was 180,000 volts that had passed through that line. The amperage, they couldn't tell, but a strike of bolt of lightning can go from 1 volt to 50,000 volts with 100,000 amperes in 1.2 seconds.
Well, there were enough amperes. If it welded, after going through your body, if it welded nails to the floor nails or to the floor,
yeah,
then there was plenty of amperage there, because that's exactly what it takes to do that, is amperage.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It burnt all the hair off my, you know, off my body. You know that story. It burnt the sides of my neck. It put this pattern across my skin.
Yeah, hair, actually, hair doesn't still does not grow on you, does it?
Well, I have maybe, you know, in the last 6 years, I've grown a little hair, but I didn't have hair on me for years and years and years. It burnt all the follicles. It burnt, moved across my skin. It was like electrolysis. It just moved across my skin and then entered. It went all the way down my spine and moved across my skin and burnt the hair off. And then, but only on a small patch on the side of my head. And then it burnt my beard. I had a little beard. It burnt the whole side of the beard off. And then almost all the other hair. But, you know, all of a sudden I go from a place of never even dealing with anything like this to this kind of explosion and the severe, horrendous pain that comes with that. You know, one thing that I can say about the last 25 years of my life is I've learned to understand pain. If I was one who inflicted it and it was the way, and it was the way to have to balance the fact of the pain that I inflicted, remorse or no remorse, I have definitely, through the course of the last 25 years, had some severe pain inflicted on me. I mean, the last place we were when we saw each other was the third near-death experience. So that's another story.
Let's stay with this one for now.
The point was that after this lightning strike and being suspended in the air and thrown back down and all those things that go with the paramedics.
Well, who discovered you?
My wife, Sandy. She was standing in the kitchen preparing dinner, and she heard the lightning bolt, and she stepped in the hallway and yelled that that was a close one. The guy on the other end of the phone, Tommy, which TM, which is my friend for 40 years, he came over because he heard the phone go dead, and he heard the thunder, and he only lived about maybe a half a mile from me, or a quarter mile.
All right, so you were literally on fire when they found you, weren't you?
Well, the clothes were burned, and the hair was burned off of mine, but it was like consuming battery acid. I was burning from the inside and out. Not only burning from the inside and out, I could not move. I couldn't see. The lightning had put a ball of fire that went around the room. It burnt my eyes so bad. And here I am, Art.
I've seen this happen to cartoon characters, you know, they come out smoking and singed. Well, for a real human with real lightning, it's not so humorous, and it stopped you. In other words, they found you, they called, what'd they do?
Went next door and called the paramedics.
Paramedics, how long did it take them from the time they called, do you think?
When you add it all up, from the time I was struck by lightning, which is at 7:05,
right,
to the time they got me to the hospital, which is sometime around 8:30, there is about an hour and 15 or 20 minutes in there. What I always tell people is dead for 28 minutes, Art, because I could have been dead 50 minutes.
You could have been, but I mean, you can document that, man.
I can
document. And we're talking about vital signs.
The 11 minutes and the 17 minutes and the 11 minutes with one breath in between those can be documented. You know, there's 17 minutes, but it could
That's
have been 30
a long
minutes.
Damn time to be
tell
dead.
Me, tell
a
me,
long God. Time to be dead. So,
and listen, dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. Took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself, and I lost more than 52 pounds. Not just a walk in the park.
No, right? Not a walk in the park.
You know, not just knocking you down and you getting up and writing a book and telling a story and doing a TV show.
I know. Dying. It's dying.
And lost everything. And what I went through in the course of understanding what people go through, in the notion of pain and suffering and that kind of stuff, did not compare and still has not compared to what happened to me in that 28 minutes. Those 28 minutes, the first time, which that wasn't a near death experience. That was a death experience.
Yeah, death experience. Now, slow up for a second, Dan. There was a lady who had a tumor in her brain, and 60 Minutes did a piece on it. It was the most amazing thing you ever saw. Actually, it was a bulging blood vessel, is what it was. And there was no way they could operate on her because to do so would have killed her.
I had three of those.
So the only way they could figure to operate on her was to drain all of her blood, which allowed this thing that could have burst to deflate. And they reduced her body temperature. They somehow, she was dead. I mean, she was dead. Everything gone, dead. Good night. She was dead. No vital signs, nothing. They did the entire operation on her brain, fixed it, closed up, put her blood back in her body at an appropriate temperature, and revived her. Now, she was gone for nigh on to 40-some-odd minutes, Dan, and at the end of the 60 minutes piece, they said, you know, I guess wondering about the whole life thing, where was she? Where was she for that 40-some-odd minutes, whatever it was? And that's one hell of a question. Where was she? In your case, 28 minutes, where were you?
I was lifting out of my body. I went from intense pain, Art, really intense pain, and not really knowing what to do with it and not being able to move, to all of a sudden floating above myself in this blue-gray period.
Well, the intense pain, Dan, had to be while you still had some form of consciousness. You had some form for a very short time, obviously.
Oh, probably 6 or 7 minutes.
6 or 7? You believe it was that long?
I believe that pain. Well, you know, when you measure pain, it comes. You measure it in nanoseconds, millionths of a second, and pain that intense. But I can, when you break it down to those moments, I can go back and remember pain so severe, and then the shift out. I shifted out into the blue-gray place.
Then
I came back into the body. I came back into the body, and this is when Sandy was across me, pounding me on my chest.
All right, hold that and repeat it when we get back. We're going to a break here. It's the bottom of the hour. My guest is Danyon Brinkley. Most of the world knows Dan. If not, keep listening, and you will soon. Saved by the Light, a New York Times bestseller, and many books since. And he's got a lot of things going on now, too, and we'll get to all of that. But first, I want you to get the rest of the story about what happened to Danyon. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning.
Of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak leaves deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories stored and the
Wanna take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Try and imagine for a moment being struck directly by lightning, knowing and having 6 or 7 minutes to know that you're in incredible pain and dying, and then out you go. And the next thing you know, somebody's pounding on your chest and you're becoming conscious again. But you know you're still probably a dead person. Somebody's just pounding on your chest. Well, that's where we were with Danyon Brinkley. And that's where we'll pick up in a moment.
Wanna take a ride?
Already been there, already done that. Time for this. Me and my big mouth. I started to say that's an inspirational commercial, and I had forgotten that there were more to come. It actually is, though. The way they did that is really cute. All right, now, away from cute and back to really, really extremely serious. And so, Dan, you had several minutes probably to think about, I don't know how conscious you were during that period of pain, that 6-7
enormous minutes. Pain, Art, enormous pain.
Anything, were you able to be conscious of anything at all other than, you know, the pain and what had just happened to you? In other words, was your consciousness rolling anywhere else like, hey, I'm dying?
No, it was trying to analyze the situation. Whenever I thought it was an incoming 101 or 155 millimeter or a mortar, you know, when you hear an incoming, you never think about being struck by lightning.
Yeah, that's right. Sure, you wouldn't think about it. Right.
My mindset was locking and loading. I was trying to find a position. Where was my weapon? I'm smelling the air, trying to figure out whether it's C4 plastique, what kind of weapons-grade material it was, because I never, my mindset was that. That's how I thought things. I couldn't move. I couldn't see. You know, it's like hitting a bunker with a shot grenade. You must find some way to defend yourself because they're coming. What my mind was doing was, when I thought about Sandy, I could not bear the fact of all that overload mentally. And then the pain was so much, then I'm out of the body. I'm only out a few moments. I'm just in that blue-gray place, the place that now after the third near-death experience, I know a ton of more things about it now.
So then you weren't viewing your own body. You weren't viewing the...
No. I don't know where. It was blue-gray, dark, and it had this tingling sensation like static electricity.
Was it like you were floating?
Oh, yes, absolutely floating. I mean, totally a total different point. Then all of a sudden, I opened my eyes and Sandy straddled across me. And she'd cleared my air passages because she'd just finished like a week and a half before that or 2 weeks before that a course in resuscitation.
Lucky for you.
Oh, you know, there are no accidents. And so she cleared the passage. She's 105 pounds. And when she raised her, I opened my eyes and I'm back on fire from that calm, safe place. I'm back on fire. I can't see, and her hands are gripped, and she's coming down and hit me on my chest again.
Yeah.
She must have already done it. And when I saw her hands coming, I'm trying to move, Art. I'm trying to protect. I didn't know what she was doing, and I didn't know what had happened.
Again, that makes sense. Who would during a resuscitation?
And I, oh, God, you know, you're just trying to...
Yep.
Well, when she hit my chest, and I didn't feel it, and she hit my chest, and I didn't feel it. That was the end of all that life stuff. All of a sudden, I'm back in that blue-gray place, and I'm floating. And I roll over like rolling over, or changing perspective is a better term. And I see her frantically working on me. I see myself. Tommy gets there. I didn't know what auras were then, Art. I never heard of an aura, and I wouldn't have given a crap what an aura was.
Yeah, I want to understand this, though. Here you are now, out again of your body after getting whacked, and you didn't feel it, so obviously you were gone again. But
yes.
Were you were in the room, above the room? You were observing this from what sort of vantage point?
I'd have to say I was, when you start to think about it from those points, I was to the left where the doorway, the bed, you came in down the hallway, then there was the doorway. And then there was the bed, which was like perpendicular to the doorway. And I was on the floor then. The doorway was to my right and to my dead right, to the person lying there, to his right. And I was from a vantage point above the door, which was my left, the real me.
Toward the top of the room then?
Yeah, at the very corner of the room.
And again, just floating?
Floating.
Seeing you, and could you see... yourself, lying there singed and smoking, and the yourself that's up there, could you see anything of yourself?
I could see both of them. I didn't, as I was watching Tommy and Sandy work on me, they had these bodies, these energy bodies. They were colors, and they were like, you know, we now know what auras are.
Right.
I mean, everybody, the NIH is using aura studies.
Sure, sure.
And that Russian guy, I just saw a report on a guy who is taking auric measurements with a Krellian camera that is being built into Russian fighter planes.
Oh, I know. But back then, of course, no aura talk.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have known what it was anyway. You know, there are a lot of records and, you know, mythology about them. But I could see all these bodies. What I noticed most about me was I was blue, and marked up with this, these lines all over me, but I didn't have one of these bodies. I did not have one of those swirling, beautiful energy that was going on. Even the plants had this. And I could see, like, the body would almost appear, the physical body was so much less dense, Art, when you looked at it from that point. And the energy bodies, like, there were two of them. There were eight different colors, but there was, like, two more bodies that we have in there inside the physical body. And they were reacting. Her emotions and his emotions were reacting and creating these energy bodies. That even the plants were reacting to their emotion.
Wow.
That always just amazed me.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Because everything is connected in an energy field, like we float in this.
Okay, did you at that point have the kind of consciousness that would allow you to say to yourself, wow, look at me, look at them, I'm lying there, and look at them, and what's happened? I mean, were you thinking at that, did you have that kind of rational thought process at that time? Or you were, no, just sort of detached, not
detached,
even thinking about it, watching?
Just detached observation. Where I was, well, I was comfortable and safe. And remember, my mind said, if I wasn't on fire and burning.
And in pain, yeah.
And I'm in a place where I can see all this stuff.
That's a better place to be.
Yeah, who cares? I didn't even think about I was dead until I got to the Panoramic Life Review. I never knew I was dead. I had no background. This experience, I mean, I was a reality-based person. I'm that today.
All right, so did you remain there until the emergency crew arrived, or what?
Yeah, I stayed. I kept watching them. The thing happened so fast because the station, the emergency paramedic station, wasn't very far from the house. You know,
uh-huh.
It took them 10 minutes, 8 minutes. They were on their way there. I watched this. But where I was, the place that I was was what's so amazing. I was comfortable. I knew this place. This place was a part of me, and I was a part of it. When I looked down at myself, and I didn't have an energy field around me like they did and the plants did. And then when the paramedics got there, and their energy fields, they weren't as brilliant, beautiful colors. They weren't like pastels, and they were calm because it was, now I realize it was just a job for them. They were doing their job, but they had these three bodies too with these eight different colors, and they were reacting to the emotions and all of this. It was only until they started moving me toward the ambulance that I decided to look at me. And I looked down at my hand, my right hand, and spread my right hand out to look at it. And as I looked at it, it was energy. It was color. It had form to it. When I relaxed my thoughts, that hand would move from a hand as we would look at our hand, like if you put a piece of beautiful silk, dyed beautiful colored silk over your hand. It went from a hand to where it blended into this blue-gray place. I never lost consciousness, but I became like a mystical rainbow as opposed to a dense light body. And I took a look at that because I was kind of peeved because I didn't have a body as beautiful as they all had. Well, you know, that's that part that's irritating to you. And so as I looked at that, I was pissed off. I mean, I was angry about it, and I'm trying to get a grip on all of this, and it's all brand new to me. But there was a safety factor, Art, a place of comfort and safety. Through all of that, I knew this place. We all know this place. This is the way we leave this world. I mean, after three of these now, but right now, this is how we leave this world. This is the structure. And these are how the bodies are, because I'm now two more since that one over the next 25 years.
I know, but was
but
there,
right now,
Dan, was there, sorry to interrupt, a consciousness that, in other words, at that moment that you looked at your hand, your urethral hand or whatever it was, and you actually did see it, but it sort of blended in, I want to try to understand whether you had good conscious cognitive thoughts or whether it was still sort of all, I don't know.
It was a little confusing, Art. Don't, in those early minutes, don't let anybody, you know, even the great wonder wizard Danyon, You know, it was some confusing stuff, son.
Yeah, okay. All right.
You know, you're trying to get a grip on it.
Yep.
And I'm reality based, all right? You know, I'm not light. You know, this stuff was real, and I'm trying to grip it. You're talking about an hour and
sure.
You're talking about 28
yep.
minutes of an existence, but over a course of like months, having to lie in that bed and wet my pants and not be able to walk, to have to think about this stuff. When I came back, Art, I mean, I'm going to run ahead, but when I came back, think about still 1975, still Aiken, South Carolina,
yep.
still Raymond's book's not out, still never heard of it, but the most real thing that's ever happened to me, all the way up to from combat, the most real thing that had ever happened to me in my life was this event.
All right.
So I'm trying to get a grip on it, but as the moments passed, an awareness, and I would say after a few moments, I don't know the time frame, because the place that you're floating in, Art, and the world that's below you, the time-space differential shifts and changes to a whole other dimension. What may have taken minutes from the perspective, or seconds from the perspective, from the physical, that with that body to the
yeah.
place where I was, could have been nanoseconds, or it could have been months, depending on what I looked at.
When you think, you know, when you think back on that time, do you think it was months compared to the physical reality going on below you?
Oh, what I could see, comprehend, and understand?
Yeah.
I could understand what in that physical life, it would have taken me 3 years to figure out what I knew in only minutes about the life of the physical world that we now live in. And over the next 28 minutes, I could comprehend centuries. You know, I could comprehend and understand things and how they developed. And once the boxes of knowledge came into play, you know, and
okay, then I want to understand as much as I can about that 28 minutes. And obviously, you became more aware and aware and aware as more time went on, which I guess indicates that when you talk to people about NDEs who have just had very short NDEs, maybe they don't collect near the depth of knowledge that somebody who was away as long as you were.
Right. I mean, you know, it's become what made Danyon the legend is I have a good memory, and I was trying to figure out what the hang this was
uh-huh.
and how to survive it. You know, how to survive it, even on the other side, Art. It was, you know, it was always to come back and build centers. You know, this has always been the mission why I keep coming back. You know, it's not just an event where I come back and I'm lost and
no.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do and all that. But it's always been to understand these things.
Well, take me from this blue-gray sort of foggy place and looking at your hand. I mean, then what?
It's not foggy now. It's clear. I'm a part of something, and it's a part of me, and it's quite obvious to me that this is the realm that is me. Now, watch how funny this is in words in English. This is a place that is me, and yet I am still separate, and I still have my identity, and I'm still Danyon Brinkley. I'm thinking like Danyon Brinkley, but by the time that the paramedics start loading me in the ambulance, I am 10,000 times more aware as Danyon Brinkley's consciousness than I ever was any day I've ever lived, even greater than I have lived now and that I've been through them, because when I come back here, most of the stuff, you cannot fit it into a conscious understanding. But over there, I could think, I could study the writing because when they loaded me in the ambulance, I'm studying the guy who's working on me, pumping me, sticking needles all in me, talking on his headset. I'm looking at the shelves of all the medicines and the drawers and the labels of the drawers. I'm listening to his thoughts. I'm listening to the driver's thoughts. I can see and conceive of what's going on because it was raining by then, and I could see how light and raindrops when the light would pass through the raindrops. And I was in this myriad of places, but I could hear everything. I could see what people were doing.
That's
in cars.
A lot of awareness, and you were, and even cars that you shouldn't have been able to see.
Yeah, driving by me.
So people, you stayed with your body.
Yeah, I stayed with my body all the way till it had to been, I don't know how long, but I can remember him saying, "He's gone. He's gone." And you know, it caught my mind. It made me stop because, you know, from the place I look at it now, the stiff was there, the guy that was working on me was there, and I was there. And I couldn't figure out who had gone where. The three of us were still here.
Yeah.
Now, this is where my mind... Then I hear these chimes. I hear these tones, these frequencies, or this tone elevation. And it was like a series of chimes. And then this darkness, it begins to form. It wasn't blue-gray anymore. It was... It's like gold dust or silver dust spread in something like as the light turns, it sparkles, or like in the discos. We used to have that light at the top where it'd color all the room and the light would shine on it.
And this was right after they said he's gone.
Yeah.
And I take it at that point you weren't seeing yourself or your consciousness of the ambulance and everything you talked about and cars near it and all the rest of it. That faded, that was gone?
That was gone.
Gone, all right.
Then I'm in a darker place. But it was moving whether I was moving or not. It had a rotation about it.
Okay.
And it was moving whether I was moving or not. And when you can take a deep breath, you know, when a lot of times when you go,
right,
that feeling of letting that breath out and total tranquility and total calm, and I still didn't understand half the stuff that was going on, but total calm and tranquility, and then I moved down this tunnel. And as I moved down this tunnel, and it's hard to put into words, but like an onion peeling away each layer.
But a tunnel couldn't be black. A color, there would have to be a perceived color to see a form of a tunnel, right?
Well, I perceived it as dark. I mean, I didn't look at the color.
So was
I was
it,
paying attention to the...
Sorry to be picky here, but I want to understand. Was it dark all around, and then the tunnel was darker? Or is it dark on
dark? No, it wasn't dark. It was blue-gray. It had a beautiful hue to it, the place that I was. It had a beautiful, the first place, lifting out of my body, and in that time frame, which, you know, we're like 50 or 60 minutes.
Right, but the tunnel itself was darker?
It was darker. It completely enveloped me, and I, for the first time, felt an energy pulling me. You know, in the place that I was floating, there was no breeze or anything. It was like I existed within this framework. I was a part of it, and it was like being more buoyant than you know, floating on water, but like floating in the air, like just skydiving and just floating.
Huh.
And then this tunnel enveloped me, and there was a force that was moving, and like how a tide does in the ocean. You know, you get pulled along by the tide.
Sure.
It began to pull me. And as it began to pull me, it pulled me down this tunnel. And it didn't matter where I wanted to go or not. I was now a part of this process of going down this tunnel. But I was comfortable with it. I was not, and I want everybody to know, because this is what's going to happen
to
them.
It's pretty interesting because, you know, based on a lot of people's beliefs, if they were, you know, they perceived that they might be dead and they were getting pulled down a dark tunnel, they might not think that they were necessarily headed in the right direction, but obviously you were calm and comfortable with what was happening to you. Listen, we're at the top of the hour here already, so hold on, Dan.
I'm here.
It's a good place to pick up. I'm Art Bell.
Good morning, Mr. Sunshine. You brighten up my day. Come sit beside me in your way. I'll see you every morning outside the restaurant.
Explanation should the value that you gain in the air of the car. She doesn't give you time for questions as she locks up your eyes and phone. You follow to your sense of which direction completely disappears. By the blue top wall the market stalls, there's a hidden door she leads you to. These days she says, I feel my life just like a river running through the air of the cat.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
You know, not very many people come back, and I mean to physical life, after being gone for as long as 28 minutes. That's what Danion Brinkley said. Somebody fast blasts to me, "Hey Art, where can I get what he's smoking?" Well, you, sir, are a fool. Everything that happened to Danion, certainly in the physical, is extremely well documented. And so you, sir, don't know what you're talking about. I really think most people are very curious about what happens to them when they die. The man you're listening to tonight has a really good clue for you. I suggest you keep listening. Once again, here's Danion Brinkley. Dan, all right, you're at the stage where you're being pulled into or pushed into or guided into.
No, being pulled into.
Pulled into a
but
dark
Art,
tunnel.
The guy who, what was he, super blasted you or called you about, he wanted some of what I was smoking?
Yeah, don't worry about him. They're all.
No, I would.
I just pulled that out, Dan. Most of all of them.
I want him to know that I think just like him. You know?
Well, look, most of the comments are absolutely positive. I pull out the negative ones on purpose.
And I wanted to compliment on him because he helps me remind me of myself.
he ought to keep listening because one day, you know, he's going to die. Anyway, point is, you were being pulled into this.
Yeah, you come and you know, remember, I've done this three times now. You don't let people know that, but I've done this three times.
We'll let people know about it.
And as I came down this tunnel, it was like peeling away Danion's, the personality that was Danion Brinkley. And I don't know how to say that, but that there was a greater me moving down this tunnel, each the more I moved down it. And then when I saw the light at the tunnel, that sense of true safety, the thing that we always say, and like when people say, "I can see the light at the tunnel," and you think it came from trains. Well, I understand that many a way, many a night, people have told this story, and that's where that came from. But when I saw the light and I got to the end of the tunnel, it was as though I was arriving home, and I had never seen this place. But I was home, and I was less Danion Brinkley. I did not think using his method. I knew Danion Brinkley really, really well, Art, because he had to be efficient.
Then how do you describe yourself at that point?
Well, I describe myself. What do you mean?
Exactly what I said. If you were less the Danion Brinkley.
I was more something else. I was more who I really am. See, when you're here on this side, you have developed a personality and a social structure, an identity of yourself within that social structure.
Some of us have. Yeah.
Everybody has. And they will operate within that as the refinement of their identity, the self, like that's what they'll do. Well, when you start down the tunnel, that stuff goes away. You know, that's really not who you are. I mean, it's really not who you are.
No, I'm with you.
And as I came into this tunnel, I was more aware, you know, because I'm thinking, I'm trying to understand this. My nosy self is more interested than just going along with it. I have to try to understand.
Well, so that's important to me. So there's something of you left.
Yeah, that identity of Danion Brinkley was the most skeptical, cynical, still he existed no matter what he had been through so far. And when he got to the end of this tunnel, he still had that identity. He could hold on to it. But I really wasn't that anymore. I wasn't.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And so I enter this place, and I'm looking around, and I'm feeling all kinds of different things. people have always tried to, you know, I've looked for years, Art, to find a word to describe what over there is like. And the best English word is sensual. And it's hard when you say it, when you go to looking at the context everybody applies to that word. When you look it up in an unabridged dictionary, it's the best definition that I know of. I was sensations, and it was a controlled sensation and a wonderment and a
sensual. Euphoric?
Euphoria.
Past euphoric.
Yeah, ecstasy. A sustained ecstasy, you know, not something out of context, everybody. I'm not
nothing
trying to
but
take it out of context.
Nothing
to give it a word.
Nothing around you but white light?
The light had hue to it. It would be silvery. It had almost a sky blue view to it, but it was white. But it was like sky blue, a cloudless sky. But the part of it was living. It wasn't inanimate. It was like a fog or a mist, but you knew it was living, and it was a form of yourself. I knew that all that I saw, I was it, and it was me. And this is when I began to come into a place of acceptance of whatever this was. And until that time, there was a part of me that was fighting this. I didn't, you know, but it was still comfortable, it was still safe, and it was still wonderment, and it was fighting me, but it was still doing that.
Mm-hmm.
When this being appeared, as though it molded itself.
All right, now let me stop you right there. Brian asks, Art, I beg you, I really do, please, if Daniel can, please have him describe the physical appearance of the beings that he saw, including the ones that presented the boxes. But this first encounter, Daniel, what did this look like?
It molded itself out of the mist. I mean, out of that area. It like took shape. And then the feeling that I felt was a place like judgment, but it wasn't, and I always say this, Art, you know, if your dad caught you doing something when you're 7 or 8 years old,
I remember that.
You're going to take a whipping for it.
Oh, yeah.
But if granddaddy caught you or grandmother caught you, you're still going to have to answer for it, but it's the guilt you would possess because it was grandmother you did it to or grandmother who caught you. You know, it's embarrassing. Or granddad. You know, you can work your way out of it, but it's still embarrassing.
Yeah.
All right? Now, this was the place this is me as honest as I know how to be. All right? This was the place where I felt. And as this being came closer to me, I have, after 25 years, I have heard every description of this being. And after seeing this being 3 times in the last 25 years, everybody says Buddha, Krishna, God. This being is moving, living energy as though you could look at love. You could take love as we feel it in our hearts and our minds for something.
But we can't picture love.
But you can't.
I mean, we understand the emotion love, but we can't visualize love as a concept that forms itself out of whatever background you were in. Is there any way to describe it in physical terms?
Yeah. When you see your baby walk for the first step.
That's an emotion.
Well, but I'm still, it's a description. It's a way that a person can feel, because it is an emotion. Or the day that your parents that are your peers are the most proud of you.
Okay, well, all of that is like maybe the grandest moments of life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's just like that.
But still, there was a presence there that had some kind of physical form.
Yeah, it molded itself. It looked like a hologram made of color. It looked like a body.
Of a being, a human
that
being.
That was made, no.
Not human-like, then.
No, it was human-like. It was like I was at that point. There was the human life, but there is no physical form that we look at on Earth unless we look at a hologram and a Tesla coil reacting, and we put a little psychedelic black light color in there.
Okay, all right.
We might have an idea. I'm pretty sure that the guy, Luke Skywalker, that guy up at Skywalker Ranch, George Lucas, could figure out how, if I could sit down with him, I could figure out how to describe that being.
Okay.
Where dreams may come from with Robin Williams gives a pretty good way, just thin it.
No, you finally did it. I think I've got it. Okay.
But what I realize now is who that being is. People call it God and Krishna and Jehovah and Jesus. And, you know, everybody that's had one of these experiences has a name for this being.
And what's yours?
I believe it's me. I believe that part of me, I believe that there's a part of us that never leaves over there. It never makes the journey here. And I believe that because in the course of three of these things, we are spiritual beings.
You mean like your soul's root?
Yeah, a place where you really are. I always try to put it in this. If you had a job every day and you were a soldier or a bank teller or something that you followed the routine, in the course of that day, that was your job description. You were out being that.
Yeah, I've got you.
But you always were something else. You know, you were worried about where you're going on the weekend or the things that you might want to do. You are not really totally all over here. You're just not. This is amazing to me, and I've checked this out two more times.
Okay.
Art, and it's the fact that we exist over there. We do, and we send a part of us through some system
mm-hmm.
that lives and functions here. That's it.
Okay. No, I can buy that. All right.
And so as I watched it, and I'm looking at it, another one of those freedoms. And if this being gave me a sense of that I was not alone. That I personally, as Daniel Brinkley, was not alone, just as I am as a person. I was not alone.
Okay.
And then I began to feel every feeling that I had ever felt. I mean, every emotion, every feeling, and little things. And then it would build itself into a psychology or a pattern of my behavior. Then all of a sudden, I had a 360-degree panoramic life review, holographic from the day I was born to the day I died. I did not know I was dead and had never put that into play through all this experience until I saw the lightning strike, which was the last part of the panoramic life review.
And so you went all the way through your whole life. I remember you telling me that, and you just said it again, that you felt everything, every emotion that you imprinted on others came back and you...
I felt it 360 degrees as I watched it. I watched it from a second place personality, like we two as friends look at each other, and I can't make you do anything, like you can't make me do anything, but I as a friend can stick by love and support just like we do each other. You watch it from that second person point of view, and then you literally at the same time become every person. Every person that you've ever encountered, and you will feel the direct results of those interactions.
That's pretty brutal.
Well, it depends on how you look at it.
Because
I didn't go to hell. There's no one listening to this radio show that's going to hell.
Well,
and I had to look at it brutally. But Art, no matter what, the near-death experience brings back from that side of the world a living system that can be used on this side of the world to prove it or not prove it, or yet to accomplish how to achieve what you want in your life, because the system was there and in place. We have to get past being afraid, because you'd be amazed at how much good you've done. People have to be amazed. You choose to come here, and you're chosen to come here. And you will not fail what you were chosen to come here.
Well, I hope...
Okay.
Look,
I'm just getting a little off into it.
Yeah, I know, Dan, that I've done some good, but I'm real worried about the bad I've done. And
well, don't worry about as much as the good you've done. Because a person, you know, we've taught religiously, institutionally, and governmentally that we're nothing, that we are born in sin, and we've all got to be coming saved, and we all are worthless, and we have to give everything to the government and give up all our rights because, you know, it's like Columbine and what's going on in the world. We just keep giving up all our rights.
Well, all right, but, I mean, here you experienced everything that you dished out. On the other side of that panoramic life review...
Yeah, I had it coming, too, Art.
What were you... I mean...
I had to feel all the misery. I had to feel all the misery.
I understand that. I mean, what I'm asking is, once it was all done, Dan, and you were still there.
Yeah. I had a chance to forgive.
How did that change you?
What it does is, right after you experience all that, and it has a way, I always say that the viewpoint is, if God couldn't come today and God had sent me, in the life I just reviewed, what difference did God make? How much good I had done was more important than being measured for the things that I had done, but yet I still had to deal with it. It didn't matter. If there was a part of you that will, even as horrible a person as I am, everybody, and I'm just as big a jerk in the world, but everybody out there, there is a way that by doing what you were sent here to do, which is, I mean, it's the panoramic life review, which I talk about over and over. You know, I'm like a broken record everywhere we are. I always construct panoramic life reviews and stuff. But right there is where you know the difference, because there is a job that you were sent here to do, and then there was a job you came to help grow yourself. It's twofold. And the panoramic life review shows you those two different places, and the job you've come to do, the only redeeming value I had after that first panoramic life review, Art, was the simple fact that there had been good things that I had done, and I could only focus on that small amount of stuff equal to all the crap that I had created and so intentionally and so viciously created. I still had to deal with it.
All right, then what?
Then I had a chance to forgive myself. And that's where I blew it, Art. You have a chance at that moment to look through, because you had seen truly what you had come to serve, or like what your mission that God sends you on, or ever how people want to interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
But what you came was sent to do, what you chose, you choose to come and are chosen to come, but what you chose to come and do had a value equal to what you chose to come and do. And because I turned into such a worthless jerk, I had missed my opportunity. But somewhere in it, I'd accomplished a great deal of what I was sent here to do.
So you didn't forgive yourself after the review?
I couldn't do it. Okay, God, Art.
All right, fine.
That's where I messed up. So everybody, after you have the panoramic life review, no matter what you think, after you have the panoramic life review, and when you get to that point where you get a chance to forgive yourself, you better do it, because it took me two more times to get there, Art. I had to do it two more times, and that's where I messed up the most.
All right, but you didn't. So then what happened?
Well, I began to ascend. The being was still with me, and I began to vibrate. And at that moment, there wasn't another Daniel Brinkley. I don't have a cognizant remember of me measuring the things around me in my personality from the time that that being, as though we were soaring, as though we were moving over like mountain ranges of the Andes or Sacramento Mountains or the Sierra Madre, you know, those beautiful, beautiful mountain peaks, and moving across them. And I could see what I call crystal cities. I have no other term for that. But they were cities that built of light. And as I got to enter the one that was supposed to be mine, you know, like in my father's house, there are many mansions. Well, that's true. Absolutely, I can tell everybody that when Jesus said that, he was telling you straight up.
So in the crystal city, there was a crystal structure for you.
Yeah, it was a place where I had come from. It either I belonged there, or it, you know, in the Bible says they prepared it for me. But I believe that I belonged there before I'd ever come to life.
So this being brought you there.
And when it could not enter, the being moved away from my view or feelings or nature, and I moved through three sets of flames. They were like what appeared to be energy levels, a violet one and a white one and this golden colored one.
Flames?
Well, it was like going through a hoop of flames. Flames, that's great, Art.
Great. Dan, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. A crystal city. Hoops of flames. That's where we are, and that's where we'll pick it up. I've got Daniel Brinkley on the line. It's been a long time, and he's in rare form, so stay right where you are. You'll hear details tonight I think you've never heard before.
Strong with chains upon my feet. you know that ghost is me. I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Good morning. Danyon Brinkley is here, and we're right at the, literally at the doors of the Crystal City. The being with him wouldn't progress, wouldn't go on. It was obvious he was supposed to, and I presume did. That's where we're going. Tara in Oregon. That's a nice name, Tara. Writes, there is only forgiveness in the end. Forgiveness of the self is key to understanding this event. The two selves are real, but meshed within the space that belongs everywhere. I thought that sounded about right. Dan?
I think it does. Where did that come from?
That came from a gal named Tara up in Oregon. I've got a computer in front of me, and I can read these messages that are coming in.
I've been there, Art.
Dan,
can I ask you a question, Art?
After I ask you one, if you had forgiven yourself,
yeah,
if you hadn't made what you called your mistake, and you had forgiven yourself, what do you think would have happened?
I could have probably stayed.
Okay.
I could have probably stayed over there.
All right, you want to ask me a question? Go ahead.
How do you get me to tell my ultimate soul perspectives about my near-death experience when no one can get that off of me?
I don't know, because I'm a control freak. All
well,
right, so,
how do you do it? I just wanted to say that. It's amazing how you do this.
Because you've never really told this the way you're telling it now.
No, never.
All right,
never.
So here we are at this. You're part of the Crystal City, and this being is not going in with you.
Yeah, I'm expanding, Art. The Danyon that is not anymore. It's I'm different. I'm like lost. I don't really know who I am, but I am so comfortable and I feel so safe because my job had been done and what I had to go through to get to this next phase of growing and expanding and this being staying with me. I believe that the being merged with me, Art. I can never get this to be true to know this.
Yeah.
But it disappeared because that I could take in a deep breath, and when I took the breath, the entrance lit up as though it was, the energy was colors. You know, it was red,
yep.
And I mean the color of it, the violet, then a hue of red.
Okay.
Okay, and they were moving. What the structure existed. I mean, everything you can see through it and watch it, and it's built of light like bricks, and you know, it has all the things that you would normally want to relate to understand it by, but it really wasn't the most important part of the place.
Yeah.
And when I moved into it, this is when I looked at myself again. I looked at my right hand again. I'm left-handed, but I looked at my right hand again.
Right.
And I had a deeper crystal structure. I sparkled. I had a different kind of more energetic than the original time I looked at my hand when I was floating above the body.
Maybe that's why you think you joined with that other self.
Well, it might be why. But
anyway, the point is, okay.
And then I moved into this cathedral. This what would, because I've been in the cathedrals of Europe, and I have since seen that that's what it was like. I'd never been in the cathedral of Europe before the near-death experience.
It starts to sound a little religious here, a cathedral.
Yeah, but when I've been to, I did a tour of Europe, and I went into all the cathedrals of Europe.
I've been in many of them. I mean, when you go into them, you feel...
It will make you reverent.
Yeah,
I don't care who
course.
You are.
That's right. Okay,
you know,
so a cathedral, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they will make you in awe of the human consciousness, and they built them and designed them in sacred art and forms that came from over there. I've seen the original model now, Art, of where those cathedrals came from. the original model's over there in the spirit world, and it's where you come from, and it's a place that you're a part of that you go to after you have this near-death experience, or this death in the panoramic life of you. You go to this place, and it's where you reunite with your grouping. You know, we come from different levels and different places, and some of us are more advanced than others, and some of us, like me, are lesser advanced. Then we have medium-range people, and teams come. I mean, this is what I believe because I've watched it through three, and I've been, you know,
all right. So then, what came to you then?
Then these 12 beings appeared, and I always have to start out by saying they are like colors. They were like honor and greatness and everything that you would think of if you could see a being, and they were spaced apart and they were animated, but they were beings that were different from the being that was with me.
With or without specific form.
They had form. They had an outline and a form.
As in humanoid, as in obviously not humanoid.
The energy,
okay.
Beauty, you know, like watching a Christmas tree that can talk to you.
Okay,
a chandelier
okay.
that can
okay.
talk to you.
Okay, that helps.
Yeah, a chandelier, a beautiful chandelier.
That could talk to you.
Yeah, I have one in Palmyra, a beautiful chandelier.
So these were obviously 12 separate beings.
Separate and so magnificent. It was I can remember the place of being humbled, Art. The humbling awe of these beings as it moved across me. I can remember that. This is distinct. These are the little moments that I hold on to.
Now remember, folks, this is where you go when you make the wrong choice, so...
Watch yourself.
I mean, you told me yourself, wrong choice. Anyway, so here
no,
you are.
No, not forgiving myself was the wrong choice.
Yeah, I know, but after you didn't forgive yourself, this is where you're going.
This is the wrong choice,
yeah,
pal.
That's right.
This is what will bring you back.
All right, so what...
So when these beings appeared, each one of them had their own radiance, and then there was a 13th being. And when this being was slightly up and to the right of the other 12, and it was as if this being was in control of what was going on. And it would send a feeling or an expression to one of the others. And then that being, the individual one, would literally fill the cathedral. All you could see was it pulsating. Not because the form stayed the same. But its energy came and blocked out every other one. I could not see the other beings. All I could see was this one, and didn't go from left to right. It was random. But that being would focus on me and a form of energy, and I could only call it a box. And I got that description from trying to find a word that let people understand what it was that happened, although it really didn't happen like that. But this energy, this thing, this box came at me, and it would open. And when it would open, I would see, like watching a television, Art, but more like what we would call, virtual reality. I was a part of it, and it was a part of me, but it was like being in the physical world again. I could smell smells, and
gotcha.
I was physically aware of things.
And what were you seeing? What were these boxes showing?
They were just, you know, the 12 boxes of knowledge. What I now know was a future event. You know what, a future events that would occur, but it wasn't the most important part of the event, although I, you know, that's why I'm doing Danyon.com, so I can publish these 500 pages of this.
But you were shown the future, weren't you?
Absolutely.
And this is important because Danyon chronicled all this, you see, in his book, Saved by the Light, right?
Yeah, I've been talking about it for 25 years, Art.
But yeah, my point is that a lot of the predictions, which we won't go through now, I mean, very specific things that you knew were going to happen or you were shown would happen.
Well, I didn't know they were going to happen, but I was shown that they were happening.
Yeah, I guess at the time you watched it, you couldn't know that you were seeing things that were going to happen.
I didn't know it till 5 years later when Raymond called me on the phone.
Raymond Moody.
Yeah, Raymond called me up, and the same scenario that I had described to him 4 or 5 years before that was on television, and he was telling me about it. That's when all this started. I didn't start this, Art. You know? I was still just working with it, coming building centers like they told me to do it.
Anyway, there was a whole
people. I didn't tell them.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of information that was imparted to you.
Right.
Can you give a couple of examples of that information things that you saw?
Well, you can go through, like, what's happening in Israel today.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and what's happening right now in Israel, and it's in Saved by the Light. It describes everything. Remember, Saved by the Light
all
was written in 1992.
Right.
So if I had made it up in 1992, it would still be the most wondrous stuff in the world about the peace accords, the Oslo Peace Accord, and then the Wye River Peace Accord. I talk about two peace accords that would be signed. What would be happening in Israel right now, the Palestinian issue, that now they will come and there'll be a, after this big deal over Jerusalem, that there would be a place where it would come that as this Jerusalem issue is to be settled, what will happen? And it's about a police force that'll come. And see what people can look at right now is buy that book and look at box 4 and 5. And remember, I've been saying this for 25 years, and I say the time frames and the places when it'll be. And the accuracy of it is that they know where we are over there. After 12 of these boxes and watching them, I've always thought to me personally, Art, it was me being trapped. I predicted Chernobyl. I predicted
For all of those that are sitting out there saying, oh, come on, it's in the book, sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
There's 25 years of it. And listen, what I did is, what I'm doing is Danion.com, the thing that when people come on your website that goes to mine.
Right.
I started to build Danion.com because I took these predictions and had them cross-referenced with people who are experts in being able to find data in support or rejection. And I have like 500 or 600 pages of newspapers that these computers that read every newspaper in the world, and they cross-reference the predictions. And so for people, just stay, come on your thing, Art, and go to Danion.com. And
how many predictions, roughly?
117. There were about 321, but 117 major things that I had to, you know what, Art? I had to remember these things and how I could structure and see it. I said that I saw the Syrians and the Chinese building rockets of biological waste and technology, and I mean biological warfare and technology, and you know that sounds pretty weird.
Well, all right.
But in 1993, in the Golan Heights, where they were manufacturing an airplane for the Chinese, an agreement was signed between the Chinese and the Israelis, but the factory was near the Golan Heights. So I may have missed it because I said it was Syrians in 1993 because it was the Golan Heights. And I don't even count those, Art. I don't count those. I just count the ones, and if it's cross-referenced, it's about an 84, 85% accuracy without me rationalizing anything. And I'm going to publish them and create a whole website about that because I need to get that out. But that's not the most important. The most important was that these were things that were guidelines that would tell me where I was in the course of what I didn't realize they were going to dump off on me, to come back and to take these. The first two near-death experiences were really about the centers. You know, they weren't really interested in Danion Brinkley. They were interested in who
Dan, you know, it had obviously already been decided that you were coming back. That's obvious. Yeah, but sure, 2020 vision from here with your story. Obviously, you were going back, and they were preparing you and giving you information for a reason.
Exactly.
And that reason wasn't to go on up; it was to come back.
Exactly.
To what you were viewing or had viewed,
and to know the time frame when things would unfold, either to give me confidence and security, because it just happened to me, Art. I didn't have to ever tell anybody. You know how many people had the same experience that's out there that just can't tell it because how crazy everybody will think they are. Well, I don't mind people thinking I'm crazy. I've been through this three times, and I've watched it, and I've watched three near-death experiences, three panoramic life reviews. And I've also watched me grow, you know, like us, you know, the relationship. I'm growing, too, because I reach out to try to understand this stuff like everybody else out there. And if we don't understand death, we can't help our moms and dads and friends. So we got to understand it.
All right. Let us finish up. You had this knowledge imparted. Were you then instantly back in your body, or?
All of a sudden, Art, I'm back in a hallway. I've never seen the hallway before, and I'm floating above this body. You know, I'm really looking for the body. I mean, I know it's in there somewhere, and
you're
know
having to look for your own body.
Yeah, yeah, I had to find it. Once they gave me the mission to come back and build the centers, once they finished with the 12 boxes of knowledge and this being of light, the beings of light, the central being of light gave me a mission. You know, it's, I wrote it the best I know how, but what it was to create a system that would bridge from this world back to that world. I mean, that's what this whole story is about.
And that's what all of that was for.
Yeah, it was to get back and to build these centers in a certain time frame, a certain way. And I lay it out in the book. You know what, Art? I'm here 25 years, and I write in these books what I'm doing, and it's taken me 4 years to make this third book, light book, the end of the trilogy, because it's a real happening event, really happening to somebody who this really happened to, and how to bring forth through the first two, what they told me to come and put here. I mean, that's what it's all about. And the next thing I know, I never thought I was going back, Art. See, I had this...
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, why would you think you were going back?
And I was so happy. You know, I've always... You know why I react to stuff now? I've always resented having to come back. It was until the third near-death experience when all that prayer stuff you created...
Okay, you were floating... We'll get to that. You were floating down the hall looking for your body. You obviously found it.
And trying to have to figure out how to get back in the thing. I mean, listen to where I was now. I was back Danyan's personality. I went from Rome in the universe back to the Danyan personality.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it's depressing. Trust me. Uh-huh. To come back to be me again, Art, yeah. That's the most depressing thing that I go through every day is I left there to come back to be this again because I didn't forgive myself. Well, I've almost gotten over that, Art. So I'm floating looking for me. I know I have to find my body, I have to get back in it, I have to make it work, and I have to get up and do these centers, this 8-step program. Same story I've been saying. My daddy, it's like a broken record, listen to my dad, listen to me tell it.
All right, so you found your body.
And then eventually. I could feel all the anguish.
And you what? You was that the first physical conscious...
Once I saw my body, because it was covered in a sheet.
Then, boom.
And I just read the paperwork that was at my feet. It was in a darkened room. I began to feel the feelings of my mom and my dad, Sandy, my brother, the people who had gathered, because, you know, I was going to die. Nobody had taken that much electricity. They didn't know what to do. I was paralyzed. I was in more pain. I went on like this for days, Art. It wasn't, you know, just... 28 minutes.
I hear you. So back in the body.
Once you're back in that body. But what I could feel was everybody feeling me, the loss of me.
Yes.
People feeling the loss of me, Tommy and Mom and Daddy and all the friends and the people who had heard about it and their feeling of loss, and it began to thicken me. It took like being constricted. And then I'm back in that body and I'm not breathing. But I'm in it, and I can feel that it's cold, or you know, it's not rigid, but it's something that I don't want to be bothered with trying to make move. I didn't want to, and then a breath came into my lungs like that, and I'm back, and I'm on fire, and I'm burning, and I hurt so bad. And the next two or three days, all I could do was hold on. That's all I could do.
And from that point until you were, I don't know, at least ambulatory, was how long?
Oh, I couldn't move. I was paralyzed 6 days, and it took 7 months before I could really, you know, I'd fall against the wall or pass out in the yard. Or the biggest moments I had some days, Art, was to get to the bathroom, man.
Yeah.
If I could make it to the bathroom and not black out and knock a hole in my head or wet my pants... And those 15 steps to that bathroom, I thought that was monumental. And I could begin to think the near-death experience. But for those first 15, 20 days, man, you can't. And sometimes I didn't know where I was, and I would drift into worlds that I'm not sure. Some of them had to be hallucinatory, but some of them were real, and I've worked on those for years. That's the stuff that bothers me about it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just stop there. You know, here I go. After that, I'm back. I become a hospice volunteer, and I go to building these damn centers. I mean, I go to start.
You're doing what you were instructed to do.
Exactly.
Dan. Hold on, Dan. We're at the top of the hour. Well, there you are. Maybe we do it all again and again. I don't know. Dan sure seems to be. Danion Brinkley is my guest. I'm Art Bell. Don't touch that dial.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walk soft, kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away. Just you and I. Sweet, sleepy warmth of summer night. Gazing at the distant light in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Danion Brinkley has had three either death or near-death experiences. I was with him for the third. I got a call from Georgia, and we'll tell you all about it. They said that Danion's dying and was going to die. The doctor said he was going to die. Danion himself talked to me and said, well, I guess you better come see me because I think this is it. And I did. I went to see him, South Carolina, and that's a whole story into itself, which we won't tell in detail, but believe it, I saw it, and I've seen a lot more I know about Danion Brinkley. Tell you a couple things I know about Danion Brinkley, all right? In the years that I've known Dan, and that's quite a few now, all he's been doing is hospice work. In other words, Dan has been spending all his time with people who are dying. That's what he's done ever since I've known him. Now, I guess there may have been an interim period. I don't know. We'll find out in a minute. But that's what he's done. He spent all his time with the dying. He goes to veterans who are dying. He goes to people who are dying from all walks of life, particularly veterans. But that's what he's done with all of his time. He's ignored a lot of worldly things, like the IRS. Right, Dan?
Yeah, they even finally got an answering machine, Art. You know? Right.
Yeah, so...
But it was a means to an end, Art. Remember, when you had three of them, Raymond came along and blew the open heart when I had to have open heart surgery because he got me to come back. Then you came along during the third one and created this prayer stuff, which you knew, I know innately you and Ramona had to have known that what happened in the nature of that prayer in the third near-death experience would be something that would make me come back no matter what, because it was just too cool.
Well, I just know it really happened. Rhonda in Texas asks this. Apparently, there was something about a bed. You were told to create centers, but something also about
the bed.
Bed. Now, Edgar Cayce also had a very similar vision involving a bed.
Well, what Cayce had, what we were looking at is the bed is a part of an 8-step program, okay? It's part of an 8-step program that when I went through the second near-death experience, I had the panoramic life review, went through the tunnel, had the panoramic life review. I had done better because being a hospice volunteer, I could go, two things could happen. I could go and be at the bedside of people I knew I could help because I had found a new value of myself from the panoramic life review.
Sure.
And I could make the most difference and accomplish the most for the reason I lived at the bedside. But it was also to be able to study and learn and know how to make the centers the best thing that I could do. Watching the visions, but, you know, it's just been a one-trick pony, and I want to get this job done. So being at the bedside and watching this, I knew from the second near-death experience that how I'd improved myself. I never thought I'd have a third one, Art. But how it improved to refine the centers by looking at, in the boxes of knowledge, the advancements in medicine.
Well, you obviously had a mission, and
But a lot of help, because like photon medicine and auric energy, bioplasmic energy studies, and stuff that's going on now in the alternative and complementary medicine world is the only way I was going to find what I needed. So the bed. But what I, in the course of studying all this stuff, because you know how nosy I am, I have to, you know, I have to get my nose into everything to better help in my hospice work, which became Compassion in Action, which now has almost 100,000 hours in the last 3 years at the bedside.
Yes, I know.
I just went over 8,000 hours myself, 861 hours in the year 2000, because I had this vision. I had a near-death experience, and I had another near-death experience, which committed me to get the job done. Then I had the third one, which really gave me a way to see what it was really all about. But why I'm doing Danyon.com, Art, is to put this information out without me driving myself crazy. And, you know, thanks for putting that stuff up there for me, since I just got an answering machine. But to put Danyon.com out there and put the headings, and I will build this site around answering the questions that people are asking and what they want to do. But one of the things about Cayce, when you look at prophets and stuff, Edgar Cayce said that there would come a day when there would be a machine that would be created that would link between this world and the other side.
Yep, when science meets the metaphysical.
Right,
yep.
Well, I knew from the visions that this would be a guideline in the basis of so much of the stuff that I've stuck with was end-of-life care and the health care, the nature of the learning of Qigong and auric bodies and energy fields.
All right, Daniel, you know something about a machine, don't you? That's being developed. Now, listen very carefully, everybody. Now, in Germany and South America, which will attempt...
I won't attempt, Art.
To communicate with the other side.
Yeah, it'll do it. It was in the vision. It'll do it.
Do you, the toughest things with visions, with remote viewing, with prophecy of the scallion kind, with Ed Dave, all of them, it's timelines. That's the toughest part of it. Not that it's going to happen, but when will it happen? Seems to be the toughest of all.
Well, because we have so much free will and we have movement and we are really powerful, we collectively as a consciousness, you know, but the spiritual beings that we all are down here, we have power. We can affect things and change and shift things. But, you know, mine is watching. It's been pretty tight, Art. You know, I missed them, but it was only my ability to interpret it in 1975 because it only happened once.
Is there any way that you know of, Danyon, to get information on the progress being made in Germany or South America or wherever somebody's working on something?
Well, yeah, I talked to them. I went out.
What do you know?
It'll be in the next year. It will be completely possible. The device that Cayce talked about and you know, Tesla talked about it. What's happened to me, or you know all this, but for those who are listening, I'm a very curious person after three near-death experiences, And I look for ways that will help people better achieve the fact that they should not be afraid of dying, because I'm not afraid of it, and I've been through every phase of it. And once you have that place, you can see how to care about the people around you and how you do your great spiritual work, but you can also have freedom to not penalize and torture yourself over things that you think you've done that's so evil, but you really didn't do as bad as you thought.
Yeah, I had Professor John Mack on last night.
And, he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he said, you know, after these experiences, one thing that we psychiatrists have thoroughly noted is that people absolutely lose their fear of dying. And I think I brought up your name, and he cited you as a prime example.
Oh, because John knows me. You know what? People know I stand for what I stand for, and no matter how crazy I appear to be, I'm very methodical about achieving this. I have before me, right in front of me, a grant proposal, an RFA grant proposal on to the National Institute for Health for a two-year project and a budget of $200,000 to take the centers that I wrote about in my books and what they told me to do, that I have a grant proposal in front of me now to go to the National Institute for Health in combination with the Veterans Administration to fund and finance the study of the centers with Larry Dossey as the lead prime researcher and Beverly Rubick and a couple of other, and the ex-head of the National Institute for Health, Wayne Jonas, on a board of review of this study.
Wow.
I mean, here it is. Here's all 260 pages filled out and ready. So
I know you're pursuing exactly what you were told to pursue. I remember one day being with you, Dan, in a quiet moment. We were talking about some of your IRS difficulties. And one of the funniest things I think I ever heard you say was, you said, well, what the hell are they going to do to me?
Kill me?
I mean, kill me? I'll tell the IRS I welcome death.
Yeah, but I'm not. You don't be afraid.
Yeah, that's right. It takes a lot of fear away, doesn't
it? But you don't be afraid.
Yeah.
I try to get across to people, everybody out there, what's so cool about listening to Art Bell is he gives you information. And my part in this is I'm 50 years old. This is 25 years of this, and I write about it in books that were 6 years ago. This next book, The Final Light Book, took me 4 years.
And that's what that's going to be the title of the final book, The Final Light?
Well, I think it's called Instilling the Light. Lose the Fear and Instill the Light.
Yeah, they change these titles as
they go. Well, Diane does all that.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Are you done? Have you finished the book?
Let me tell you something really funny. This guy who I know that I'm as irritating to him as I am to you, Don Henson, he called me one day, and everybody always writes my tune, my epitaph.
Yes.
And I made him really mad because I was yelling or something. And he said, I know what we're going to put on your tombstone. Here lies Danion Brinkley. Finally.
Finally.
And
you know, that's not all that bad, actually.
Well, but, you know, this shows that I irritate the life out of my friends, and I don't really mean to. But Art, in the course of bringing this center into play, in the end of life, I could find that place that could make the difference in end-of-life care. Now, the centers came from a spiritual world, and I brought it back, and I've been saying this over and over. My father will back it up, and everybody who knows me, it's the same stuff I've talked about.
Yeah, with a big exasperated sigh, I'm sure.
Oh, God, even you. Look how often you have to hear it.
I know. I mean, it is your obsession. I mean,
absolutely. But it's in front of me.
For the public for me, that's how and why this story all works.
Yeah, I'm still doing it, and I don't click, and no matter what else is going on. But you brought into it in the third near-death experience. See, I was looking at these devices, these machines, because the advancement of computers and the advancement of computer technology, what happens with this aura-producing machine, which is a magnificent, and these voice, this transcommunication, which I've studied since 1992, watched them every day, and watch the development of it, and watch how you can trap it and get caught in it. And I've seen some of the most amazing stuff in the world. And as this comes out, and the veil begins to lift, because when people can sit at home, and this is a program, you know, what I wanted to do with you, if it's true, what shall we do, was to create a program where people can take their tape recorders and to follow the procedures of the places and the equipment that's being made. And the people that you know out there in Art Not Land, you know, like me, they'll try it. And we'll get a call in to let people call in and send their tapes in and information, and then we can get them analyzed by all those people that you know. And then maybe that Art Bell creates that system that people can communicate between it, and we do an experiment. It worked with prayer, Art.
I know.
It worked with prayer.
And I still don't fully understand what prayer is. I just know it works. Dan, your books, are they, which, I'm sitting here holding, for example, at Peace in the Light.
Yeah.
Saved by the Light was first. How many are still available? How many are out of print? What's the deal now?
I mean, it's in paperback. It's in the top 1% of Amazon. It stays up there. People buy, you know, I've sold, you know, millions of books.
Because what you heard tonight was just sort of a gloss over, even here on extended form radio, as compared to what's in the book. So can they still go get...
You can go Amazon, you know, it's up on your website.
Can they still go get Saved by the Light?
Saved by the Light and A Peace in the Light. And for everybody, Danyon.com. I mean, there is the Twilight Brigade, which is Compassion in Action. But if you go to Danyon.com, I'm going to build this website around all of this stuff, Art. I mean, I've been through three of these. I'm 50 years old. I have a lot of opinions about things other than death. You and I were talking about chemtrails.
Yep, and we'll get to that in a second. Dan, I want to ask you something. I know what you go through with your blood ever since the original horrible thing, your death, I guess.
Absolutely.
Ever since then, how are you now? The audience will want to know, how are you now?
Everybody.
Your blood levels, what is it in your... You take...
Coumadin.
Coumadin, yeah.
Yeah, blood thinner, but I have to take so much of it. You know, what was going on? I did Mike Siegel, and everybody thought I was an outer space Art, but, you know, there's nothing I could do about all that. That was a Veterans Day, and I have a problem that my blood disappears. One of the things of being struck by lightning, everybody, is you are now a part of a medical paradigm. You are in the Office of Rare Diseases and Disorders, considered a disorder, because so many things happen to people that are struck by lightning as opposed to any other form of electrocution, because usually no one ever lives. But the few people that have lived, they develop intuitive powers and psychic powers, and they develop ways of empathic feelings of communication with people, like knowing what's going on around them. They go through a lot of the stuff that historically have always been related to shamans or lightning.
Yeah, I happen to know, I'll tell my audience, rarely do I say things like this, but I know personally of... Oh, I don't know, a couple dozen times when I've seen Danyon's psychic power, and it would put you to your knees if you were in my position. I mean, it's really that serious. He really has it. It's interesting, though, to some degree, I know that right after it happened, you had so much telepathy ability that you were hearing a cacophony of thoughts all around you to the degree where you couldn't even stand to be near people for a long, long time. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. All right, I could move objects. In those early years, I mean, there are legends about all that stuff. I could move and float crystal if it was like a crystal glass.
Mm.
I could move my hand around it. I mean, these things have subsided as I've become more aware of staying focused on getting the mission done.
Is it continuing to fade?
Well, to a certain point, thank God. Now I only know 90% of everybody's business, you know, but I don't have the power of the mind skills that I had when I could move objects and I could, you know, affect electricity. These are things in the first 2 years, like 76 and 77, could do. I could change and put my hand over watches and like LED watches, not like, you know, like making watches stop or start. It'd have to be electronic. But those things have subsided. But the intuitive thing is, since I focus so much in end-of-life care, I believe that I can teach people how to do what I do. That's what Danyon.com is about, and that's what you allow me to talk about.
How do you think that you can really teach people to do what you do without them having had the profound experience that you...
Compassion in Action. I mean, you know, just the foundation and the trainings, they really are the mat, they disguise, I want everybody to be Harry Potter. I want everybody to have and feel that place.
But there's such a difference between describing something in the first person as you could do to somebody who'd be lying on a bed and dying, and somebody trying to do it having been trained by you to
well,
do
maybe
it.
Not.
There's got to be such a big difference.
Well, it is a big difference, but there are times, like now with Compassion Action, there's 4,800 of them. And the stories that they tell me, that the things that happened to them, and they have to come and tell Daddy, you know, have to come and run it by me. And these are the people who really get out every day, hundreds of hours, aren't you? 27,000 hours my people put in VAs and places across America. That's 27,130.3 documented hours. There's another 34,000 that can't come under the criteria, you know, but the basis of what they have achieved and why. Because, like me, I hospice volunteer for 24 years because I know that's where I am the closest to that world I live.
I understand. You hear the passion about all this, folks. I want to ask you, Dan, what is your current condition? How are your blood levels?
Better than they've ever been. Art, by looking at the machinery, the photon machines, and looking at the different diagnostics machines that were in the vision, like I'm going back to Colorado Springs where the Tesla coil was invented to look at another piece of equipment that analyzes. I have to say that these two machines that I've discovered and the doctors realizing that my body was not producing enough blood.
Yeah, how often do you have to get your blood checked now?
Oh, every 2 weeks.
Yeah, every 2 weeks. For the Coumadin level versus...
To the amount of blood in my body.
Because with the Coumadin in there, at any time, you could begin to hemorrhage in your brain, which, of course, you did with your third NDE.
I take, 20 to 30 milligrams a day.
Hold on, Daniel. I'm Art Bell. We're going to take calls in a minute for Daniel Brinkley. Stay right where you are.
From west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Here's something that a lot of people don't know. When I went to South Carolina, when Danion was dying for the third time, I went to visit him in the hospital, and I took with me, at his request, a camcorder. And I actually recorded, this was the night before Danion was going into brain surgery, which they didn't think he'd make it out of. In fact, they were going to probably have to crack open his chest so they could, they were thinking, revive his heart. If one of these clots in his brain let go, they had to relieve the pressure, and they drilled holes in his head. It was terrible. But the night before, when nobody thought he'd make it, I recorded what he had to say to the world. And I still have that tape. And, you know, I'm going to hold it until the finally is inscribed. If that is, unless my time comes first. But I do have that for Danyon, and I'm holding that. I want you to understand how true everything you're hearing is. We are about to go to the phone. Stay right where you are. Danyon Brinkley is here. Here in a second, we're going to go to the phones. We're going to let you ask Danyon Brinkley questions. In the meantime, Dan, this is interesting. I just got an email from Ireland. Oh, by the way, that reminds me, just before I do read this, we've got an international line. So from Great Britain or Asia or South America or, I don't know, the North Pole, anywhere in the world, you can call us toll-free. We'll pay for the call. All you've got to do is manage to get through. And some of you I know in Great Britain and Asia know how to do it. You call a certain number or you call the AT&T operator. Anyway, give it a try wherever you are in the world. Our international number is 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903. But the email is from Ireland, of all places, and it's somebody you know, apparently, named Mike Pettigrew.
Yeah, he's the guy that has your T-shirt on my website.
It says, can you ask Dan, please, if he has any intuitions about Europe, specifically Ireland, and Earth changes over the next couple of years? Most of the Earth changes info we get over here relates solely to the U.S., and very little is mentioned about the future of Europe. Thanks to both of you. Mike.
Oh, that's wonderful. He's on the that's what I'm doing with Danyon.com. The Ireland is safe. It's not going to change too much. It's the nuclear radiation and what happens in the submarine. And in the vision, Ireland is one of the hearts of the reuniting of man and the earth and Celtic tradition and good science and
so,
good business. So
Ireland, what about Europe generally?
Europe generally is in trouble.
Trouble.
It will. Here it comes. Here comes the change. I'm not going to be Gordon Michael, because most of the earth changes that happened to me that I saw was Japan and Central and South America and Mexico. But Europe begins to, first has to be the corroding of the economy and how they handle, look, they're killing all the cows. They're destroying the whole way of civilization to operate. And why would they do that? So that,
well, I know things are upon us that are almost biblical.
Greater control of the of people are,
maybe they are biblical.
You know, there's a greater control to be established. If you take away that food source, then what you put in to replenish it, you know, I'm like you, I'm pretty cynical about that. Why I have trouble with the IRS, and they're really good to me, Art. I just fight things on principle. I fight the National Institute
before we
of Health,
get away from
and I fight the Veterans Administration.
I know.
I fight them on principle.
I know you do. I know you do. Mike said, P.S., tell Danyon he was right with his prediction. I'm getting married on on May 19th.
That's
East of the Rockies. Call toll-free 1-800-825-5033.
He's a really smart guy, and he studies and tries to put together programs, and he asked me about it. He was dating this other person, and you know the same stuff
you,
I
you told him he was going to get married?
And told him when and who it would be and
really?
All that.
No kidding.
Who it was, what they were like.
He's in Ireland.
Personality.
Anyway, he already said you were right in your prediction.
Well, you've been there.
All right, here, yeah, I know.
You know, Roger,
yeah, and you know what? I'll tell everybody in the audience, being with you at times when you're being psychic is not real comfortable.
I do it to everybody, but I don't mean to, Art.
It's like you can take Danyon.
Only but, so much.
But in doses. Doses O Danyon. That's all you
Well,
you really are too psychic, and it's absolutely unnerving. You're going to take calls is what you're going to do right now.
Okay, can I say one other thing, though, Art, about one thing I've discovered? I'm still on those chemtrails. You know how that bothers me. Can I say that?
Well, you can say it now, whatever you want to say about chemtrails. Go ahead.
Everybody, from listening to Art Bell and Robert and Ghost Wolf and people talking about chemtrails and government conspiracies and
William Thomas is a name that really has to be mentioned.
William Thomas. I went to I listen to all that stuff, Art, and I know more about the government because the people, I have a lot of people who work in the government who tell me stuff. But I don't buy all that conspiracy stuff. But there's something that has to be recognized. I listened to all that stuff, and I got off of an airplane. I got on off of an airplane in Colorado Springs, and I saw these chemtrails.
Yep.
Stuff that you had talked about.
Yep.
And I'd just kind of listened to that stuff. I had all the symptoms when I got back on that airplane and got here. It liked to kill me. It's what really made me start pushing to make sure I'm healthy and conscious and doing and looking at the energy bodies and really healing myself, like you're talking about this growth hormone. Really doing it because chemtrails exist.
Dan, I'll tell you something else. The environment's in really serious trouble. Just in the last few days, you may not know about this, Dan.
Alan.
I noticed it a week ago because of my audience. We get on everything early here. But there was this foul, yellow haze that descended on the entire western third of the United States. And
from China.
At first they ignored it. They couldn't figure out what it was, or they wouldn't admit what it was. But now we have stories indicating that not only was it dust from Mongolia, but it was pollution from China. And I've got a story that says you might as well get used to it because it's going to keep coming and it's going to get much, much worse.
But I believe, Art, that that's controlling of weather patterns. Look at Fallon. Right now in Fallon, because of Jim Peters at Stockman's and Alicia, they have from them telling me stuff that's going on there, they have wells that have depleted uranium at 370 times or 370 parts per billion, and they have children dying of leukemia.
Yeah.
And it's right there in Fallon, and there's people who are doing stuff about it. Jim Peters listens to Art Bell, and he's doing with his place there, Stockman's, and his children are doing studies and reports on it in school and stuff to bring awareness. So people, what you do, Art, like I'm telling people about chemtrails, stuff that you put out on the air, I don't know how all of it is true, because some of these people are really stretched, and I may sound like that to a lot of people, but a lot of this stuff is true, and chemtrails are so real. And
I have a different format, Joe. People aren't used to it, Dan, and I allow people to say what they want to say. I assume my audience are a bunch of grown-ups, and they can sift the BS from the real stuff. I just have a forum, and so you will hear things here that you will not hear elsewhere. Some of it true, some of it BS.
All right, you shift through them pretty fast. Don't try to fool me.
Well,
I watch you. People can tell when you get them. What is so much fun about?
Yeah, but see, Dan. Dan. No, that's not the way I do it. I don't get them. I let them get themselves.
Absolutely.
All you do is let out enough rope, and eventually they get the right configuration, get it around their neck, and they're hanging and swinging in the breeze.
I believe you do it. Day
here come
in
the calls, Dan.
First time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
Yeah,
hey,
okay, let's hold it. I'm sorry, dear. I'm going to have to bleep that out. We don't allow last names on the air. So let's try it all over again. Your first name is?
Marlise from Portland. And
Marlise.
I'm really sorry. It just popped out automatically.
I know it happens.
Hi, Art. Hi, Danian. Danian, I've watched you. I had the opportunity to start watching you on the Wisdom Channel in November, and watched you in November, and they rerun you again in December and stuff, and I can't get enough of you. My father passed on January the 1st, and because I've watched you, I was able to help him transition.
Oh, golly, thank you so much for calling and telling me that.
You know, it has changed my life, Danian. Things have just been, before that even happened, and when I was watching, I told my husband, who's a disabled vet, and I said,
tell him I love him.
Pardon me, I sure will. I told him that, you know, this is what I want to do. I said, I can feel it inside. This is really what I want to do. And then when it happened with my father, and, you know, and it was supposed to take all day, and it took about an hour.
Because you were there going through the stuff. What Compassion Action is, now a Portland organization there. Just look it up. It's Portland and Compassion in Action.
I will.
But what I try to do is to train people. You know, after three near-death experiences and being around, you know, I spent 8,000 hours, and I've been at the bedside of 296 people, and I study it, and I can take those things and help people just like what you're saying, so you can deal with that. Because if you are able to deal with that, you can really live life. You can explore the things like what art talks about, and you have time for your own personal self because you're not so caught up in it. And that's what I'm really all about. Go to Danion.com, Danion.com, and then just push up CIA. Compassion in Action, and it'll take you to where you can sign up and who and what you look at and all that stuff.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Take care. A wild card line, you're on the air with Danion Brinkley. Where are you, please?
Western New York.
Okay.
Okay.
Your name, sir?
Oh, this is Sean.
Hi, Sean.
How you doing? What I understand is, I've got a couple of questions. You were struck by lightning?
Twice.
Twice. Oh, wow. Okay.
1975-1978.
Destroying yet another old myth about lightning never striking twice.
Talking on the telephone in my bedroom, two different houses, 13 miles apart, 3 years apart.
Okay. Well, I apologize. I picked up your show kind of late. I'm third shift employed, so.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Have you ever thought about, are you familiar with John Edwards?
Yes.
Okay, have you ever done any work with him?
Yes.
Okay, where and when?
John, I've done programs with John.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't do programs with John now,
mm-hmm.
but I've done programs with John. I've done programs with everybody who does that that form of transcommunication, George Anderson and Sylvia and James von Prague and
everybody. I'm going to have James on next week.
He's good as gold. But as to John Edwards, what do you want to know about it?
Well, actually, he is the only one that I would, I do pay attention to. I mean, you get these 900 psychic lines.
I don't even pay attention. Not the psychic lines, but I mean, I'm not. John is, I can't say that I can say that John's not real, but I'm not going to support John in his style and his technique of how he does it equal to George Anderson or James von Prague or Sylvia Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to do that.
You asked for an assessment, caller. You got it.
Okay.
Not going to do it. So keep looking. Look around at others before you choose that one place.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for the call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Danion Brinkley. Good morning.
Hi, this is Brian from Fort Smith.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
First of all, I want to say I love your show more than anything I've ever heard.
Thank you.
And just one simple question. I mean, you talk about these intuitive, these insights you get.
Right.
And, are they all gloom and doom?
No.
I
get really good stuff. I mean, there's two things. There are the boxes of knowledge, okay? The boxes of knowledge are there. There's nothing I could ever do about them. The second part of the second near-death experience gave me the rest of the centers and how to do it. That is totally, completely different from Danion Brinkley as an intuitive or as an empath. Totally, completely different. I pick up a lot of stuff about people. But in the boxes of knowledge, there was some pretty horrible stuff, but there was some magnificent stuff. Advancing as us as spiritual beings, the way medicine will be as our light bodies and energy bodies come into play, the way that we will be able to commune with the other side and not be afraid and know that it's just another dimension because we're coming. I think this planet, this Zachariah Ascension story that he just told me, as it begins to evolve in 453 genes and, oh, God, and it's 3,600 years, it really makes a lot of sense in the total amount of divisions that here comes an age of enlightenment. We are 10 or 12 years from a complete new age of enlightenment.
All right, so, caller, the answer is good and bad, just like life.
Good and bad, but there's great future for us spiritually, but there'll be a few rough times like Art wrote about in The Storm.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You.
Take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Danion Brinkley. Hi.
First, I wanted to say how much I appreciate the people you've had interviewed the last few days. It's been incredible.
Thank you.
I wondered, Danion, I I believe I've been called to do something here, and I heard a little bit of mention about you had a couple of years when first it was very difficult and to even be exposed to others and such. And I'm having difficulty, and I have a pretty clear vision of what to do, but I can't seem to get it done.
Well, I feel the same way. I've been at this for 25 years, but you see, remember, I'm living proof in the books that I write and the stuff that I do that you can get it done. I want to have a life. I have given, I'm 50 years old, I've given 25 years of my life to fulfill a project. I am within fingertips of accomplishing it, and I have the data in front of me, and I decided to, you know, I talked to people, and the way I want to do it is to put it out on the web, Danyon.com, and I'm going to build this and explain everything and put it out there. And if I've now heard that you can even talk on the Internet.
You can. Caller, what's preventing you from...
You can achieve it. If
well,
you really want a life, you can achieve it. And I want a life. I've already begun to design the new life that I get to be as Danyon Brinker.
Okay, but caller, what do you think is holding you up?
Well, I'm disabled. I don't have the money to... I'm supposed to build a spiritual retreat 60 miles southwest of here, and I have...
Sounds just like me, doesn't it? I was dead, completely paralyzed, and I had to build a spiritual retreat. Did you have a near-death experience?
Very similar. I had an enlightenment experience on November 27th.
Don't you just hate how they do that to us? Don't you just hate it?
I do look forward to talking with you another time. I don't have a computer, but I'll...
Post Office Box 1919, Aiken, South Carolina.
All right. Oh, yeah. Let's do that right now, Dan. Give your address really slowly, would you?
Okay.
Danyon Brinkley.
Post Office Box 1919.
1919, huh?
Aiken, A-I-K-E-N.
Aiken, Georgia.
South Carolina.
South Carolina. I'm always trying to put you in Georgia.
Yeah.
South Carolina. And the zip code?
29802. And go to Danyon.com and just keep coming back to Danyon.com if you have a computer. And Compassionate CIA is already up, but you'll see the headings of where I want to take all of this.
Yeah, I understand. Danyon Brinkley, Post Office Box 1919, as they'd say in...
You're funny.
Nine.
I love you, Art.
Aiken, South Carolina, 29802. Right? Is there any other, do you have anything like email or any other way?
Danyon at mail, M-A-I-L, Excel.
Wait a minute. Danyon at?
Mail Excel.
Mail Excel?
Yeah, .com.
.com. Mm-hmm. So, all right, you'll get a lot of email. Danyon at mail, M-A-I-L, right?
Yeah.
And then Excel, all strung together, .com.
All right.
All right, Danyon.
Let people write. I mean, come send me the stuff. I have Valerie and Greg, and they'll look at it.
You managed to get people to write back to you? I mean, did you manage to get people to help you, or do you write back to people? Or
well, I do the best I can, Art. I'm like, you know, there's thousands of stuff that comes in here, thousands of pieces. But I have my cards, and I have people who help. You know, I'm like a cottage industry like anybody else in this. And I just try to get everything out, and I have people who do it and look at it, and they highlight the stuff that I'm supposed to. They know what matters to me, and I get some of the greatest mail in the world, and people report to me all kinds of stuff, you know, from If It's True, What Shall We Do, from
sure.
Government agencies. I'm like Art Bell in the underworld, what I hear. But
all right, listen to me now. We're coming up on the top of the hour. It's almost 5 o'clock there in South Carolina. Even in Georgia, too. So I always give my guests a choice. If you want to head to bed there at around 5, you can do that right now, or I have one last hour of the show. Your option all the way.
I'd like to stay. I mean, thank you.
All right. Consider it done. Rest. Revive. Take a good deep breath, and we'll answer a lot of phones in the next hour.
What will you do when you know me? No one waiting by your side. You've been loved, I don't know if you know. You know it's just your own family.
really nothing we can't do.
No, we could, you know we could.
If we want to,
you know we could, you know we could.
We could have cut off the stars. Yes, it's so easy.
Wanna take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
Now, I'm trying to watch that international line as carefully as I can. I can't always concentrate on it, but for heaven's sakes, wherever you are in Europe or Asia, go ahead, take the plunge. If you've got a question for Danian, the international number is there. All you've got to do is figure out how to get through. We've got codes on our website, which is www.artbell.com, that you can try before the 800 number, or you can call the AT&T operator, wherever you are. The number is 800-893-0903, and I'm watching that international line like a hawk, sort of, half a hawk. 800-893-0903. This hour's on the phone with Danian Brinkley. Once again, Danian Brinkley. Dan, you're back.
Yes, and Art, I would support...
You've heard that before, haven't you, Dan? Hey, Dan, you're back.
I support that last commercial that you just did about gold.
So would Sitchin.
That's where I'm telling people. I would recommend it very much that we followed up on that, because if that crowd's coming, I want to have plenty of it for them.
It's a good point, Dan. It's a really good point.
No doubt.
I know
who's going to make it worth $8.50 if Zachariah's right.
It's interesting, though. There is something about gold, Dan. If you hold a $20 gold piece in your hand, you know, one of the old double eagles or whatever,
right.
There's something different about it. It feels different. It's got a different aura about it. There is something about
it. It was amazing.
Gold.
When you said it tonight, Art, it was amazing to me the nature of, as you were blending your thoughts with it, I could feel that, you know how I do when I listen to those things. There is something really true about what Zachariah is saying.
Yeah.
And when you started relating the way that we feel about gold, and because it's always here and it only ferrises just a small amount, and only part gold that's not here that was here since the beginning of time is in spacecraft floating around the planet. The rest of it's still here. But when you look at gold and you listen to that, and just from what you were saying, because I felt it like everyone else felt it, there's something real about that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, here we go. I promise calls, and that's what they're going to do. First time caller line, you're on the air with Danian Brinkley in South Carolina. Hello.
Hello.
Where are you?
My name's Rod, and I'm calling from Saskatchewan, Canada.
Okay, Rod. Right.
Hi, Rod.
That's international. Yeah, kind of international, I guess.
We're up here
in the booties. First off, welcome back, Art. I know you're sick of hearing that, but...
It's all right. Thank you.
This is, like I said, first-time caller line, I guess.
Yes, sir.
I've been listening for years, and this is the first time I've actually got through.
Bless your heart.
I'd like to commend Danian for his work with palliative patients. You know, there should be more help with the people who are dying.
They're really going to be living. But I thank you. I'm trying to create that buffer. What can I help you with?
Well, my dad died of cancer in May of 97, and my mom had a stroke a year ago. And I kind of looked after my dad when he was going through the dying process and everything through palliative care. And,
the way you're supposed to do it.
And I've been looking after my mom since she had her stroke, you know, with the health services and stuff nowadays. You don't really get everything
you
that you would hope for.
Do you play
and
music for her?
So, you know, I'm more or less a physiotherapist and speech therapist, and, you know, I'm not working right now.
Hey, you may not have heard Dan, sir, hold it. Dan asked, did you play music?
No, yes, I do. I am a musician.
You got it. There is your key.
Pardon me?
That's your key.
Well, I'm also a golfer as well.
Well, but I'm not. Let's watch. The key to be looking at how to help your mom.
Okay.
And using the spheres of music. Now, this may be odd to you, but you think of a song that you composed for your father. A song that you would compose about your father. And as you find those chords in that musical, in those spheres, and you play that music for your mother, it gives him a way to take the spheres of music or the spheres of sound, that vibration, move through you as you compose it and play it for her, and you will see a miraculous improvement in the condition of her and in the condition of how well she's able to regain as much of the use of herself as she should as a stroke. But, you know, you are the vehicle. Try me.
A couple questions. Am I going to make out career-wise for the next couple of years? And
well, no, we're not doing...
I can do that for this one, Art. If you do what I tell you, you will. If you go and write the song for your mother, and, you know, you'd be amazed at what's going to happen when you get your father to come and help you as you write a song thinking about your father, and you play it for your mother, you'll be amazed at what happens
to your career.
All right,
now, let me stop you cold, Dan. I know, and a lot of the audience knows, you can do psychic readings. We don't do those, and I don't do them on this program, so, and I know it's irresistible for you.
I know I'm cheating, Art, but I had to get one in.
Hold on, hold on, as best you can, Dan, and don't do it.
Okay.
All right,
you caught me. Right.
Wild card line, you're on the air with Daniel Brinkley. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Well, hello. What a pleasure, Art, Daniel.
Hello.
This is Kanan. Hello?
Yes, Kanan.
This is Kanan. I'm calling from the high desert of Burns, Oregon.
Okay.
Daniel, several years ago, this has just been driving me crazy. Several years ago, you were on the Carolyn Maryland show.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And you mentioned that one of the things that you had seen in the future was the discovery of a creature, a species, that was going to make us rethink about who we are and everything. And I just wondered, I haven't read your books, but have you ever divulged what that creature was?
No.
No, and you won't until it happens?
It's in China, though.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's good enough for me, actually.
It exists. Listen.
All right.
It's in as Art unfolds forbidden archaeology, the kind of stuff that Art and I always work on, you know, if it's true, what shall we do is like something we're working on. There are things that he's learned, but I've learned them too, as people let me know stuff.
Yeah.
And they've discovered it already. It's been discovered.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that wait 48 hours before you talk about a UFO. It's in one of those kind of modes. But nonetheless, and I listen to Art about a lot of this, I ease it out a little at a time. That's what Danion.com is about.
Uh-huh.
And you know, something I wanted to mention about Canada, Art, and I'm trying not to make a prediction. But the destiny of what's going to happen in America in the next 8 years is being decided in Quebec City today.
Quebec City.
And there's 100,000 people up there protesting.
I know.
And they're blocking them out, and I want everybody.
Why is that the future of America, though?
Man, it is the meeting of how they're going to structure the Western Hemisphere in the making of the three empires, the Western Hemisphere, the European, and the Asian common market. And I bet you if you look at the predictions about the border between America and Mexico, where I said they would have to have troops to board these borders, I'll bet you they're about to eliminate the border between Mexico and the United States, and a new buffer zone 150 miles into America and 150 miles into Mexico will be established at this meeting, and we all of a sudden begin to lose a certain boundary in the nature of trade and what's going on there.
I'll bet you they don't do it, Dan. You want to put money on that?
Well, I'll bet you that it sets itself in motion because it would have to fit.
Well, we're headed there eventually, but we're not there yet.
Well, here's the thing.
Any president who would do that right now would find himself so quickly out of office in the next election. Nuh-uh.
Well, I'm agreeing. I'm just saying that this is part of...
set it in motion.
Once the walls, once there was no longer protection and the millions and millions would flow in,
yes.
This is one of the box of knowledges, and I can cross-reference through this. You know, I had this thing all cross-referenced through people who do search engines and who study this stuff for the government, who do this are intelligence gathering people who cross-reference these predictions.
No, I understand. It's downline somewhere.
As I read it, this has to be the next movement, and I want people to be aware of that, to know as much about this Quebec City meeting as they can possibly get information about
I'm all for that. It just wouldn't happen that quickly. They may plot it and strategize it there, and it may be the beginning of it, but it won't happen yet. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Daniel Brinkley. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in Austin, Texas. This is Eric.
Yes, Eric.
Right.
Hi, how you doing? Welcome back, by the way. That automation system is an Inco system, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
The machine that you have your commercials on, that's an Inco system, isn't it?
No.
No?
Okay. No, it's a Sony mini disc.
Oh, well, okay. I was just thinking you had what a lot of the radio stations had. And stuff
no,
like that.
I have primitive stuff here. Do you know that I have cart machines?
You still have those old cart machines.
And you couldn't rip them. They've tried to rip these things out of my hands for I don't know how long, and they're never going to get them.
Oh, we get along so well. I got an answering machine, Art.
Well,
he's got an answering machine. Yeah. That's progress for Dan.
I've got a statement and a question for Danian.
Sure.
First of all, I saw you at the 99 Whole Life Expo, the last one to come through Austin, Texas. And when you talked about the entrance to the Crystal City, how it basically was vibrant colors and stuff like that, the immediate thing that flashed through my head was a reflection of your aura that I saw in your aura photograph.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's the same thing that you saw, but that's what I got. And it was
my auric energy field being enhanced for the things that I needed or the things that I had earned.
Yep. That's what I was seeing, because you mentioned the whites and the reds. I saw the white on
and
top,
the violet,
the reds surrounding
the violet,
it.
The violet,
yes.
And that crimson, and then there was a white, and then a gold, like a little bluish, and then gold.
Yeah.
I mean, it was something I noticed more dramatic than the building itself. You know, I'm looking at what looks like plexiglass brick, and they had each of them had its own nuclei. It had its own energy field. And I was looking at the structure, and then when the being merged with me, which I can't say for sure that's what happened, but I believe that's what happened, then these fields opened like it was the gateway for me to be able to enter into the Crystal City.
Interesting. Now, let me ask you a very pointed question here. What is your greatest challenge as far as meeting your mission? I mean, anywhere from a day-to-day basis to the overall picture in general, what do you think is your greatest challenge?
Okay, my personal mission, which is try to be nice to everybody for a full day.
Huh.
I fail that miserably, and I'm still working on it. I mean, this is my personal mission. It is the hardest thing for me to tolerate. I am the most impatient, irritating, arrogant person you'll ever want to meet.
So. And I'm thinking you will finally go to your grave that way, too.
But this is who I am. But in my spiritual mission.
That's what he meant.
I couldn't really ask. I mean, you always need money, but you always need expertise and people to volunteer. But I am so close. And, you know, I am so close. If I just stay out of my way, and really put out an effort with compassionate. Compassion in Action is designed to take the centers into the VA and to create a study that I can take World War II veterans. They can go through this program. I believe that I can take a World War II veteran and been in a German or Japanese prison camp and create a double-blind study and let a certain percentage go through the program and a certain percentage not go through the program. And I believe this center program will leave 17 to 22% faster. People who go through it will leave this world. A veteran would be able to let go because of what happens in the course of this program.
Yeah, if you could prove that, Dan, the funding would come. So
hey.
So that double blind test would be a good idea. Listen, I've got another question for you.
Okay.
It comes from Canada. And they want to know in Canada, you know, there's a terrible amount of strife. Other than what's going on in Quebec right now, there is a terrible division in Canada. Many people want Canada to separate and break up, and some even want in the West the provinces to join the U.S. Do you see anything like that occurring?
We had better be very careful about Quebec. I believe that Canada will hold together, but there is an opportunity in the next 2 years. You know, it was only one vote that kept Quebec from...
That's what I said. It's going to be by the skin of its teeth.
But what we better pay attention to is Canada is the true melting pot of the Northern Hemisphere. And these divisions are very, very possible to come into existence. But I believe, because Canada is the melting pot, and it's showing its growth from the Chinese influx into B.C. to the Quebec, the way Quebec sees itself as a monetary power, even into the eastern in Toronto and that area. These are three complete different sections. There's English and American, I mean English and European in the eastern part. There's Asian in the western part, and in the center is Quebec. Yep. This is the real place where you can watch what's going to happen in the world by watching how we integrate Chinese, how the French and the European of the Quebec and of the...
They're actually doing very well with it. In Western Canada, it's worked out very well.
They're teaching
fabulous.
Us, the Canadians teach the us in the States are a way to truly look at integrating a world perspective.
All right, here we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Danian Brinkley. Hello.
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 Hi, my name is Cindy, and... Danny, and I saw you a few weeks ago at the Marriott.
The Marriott? Well, where are you?
I'm in West Los Angeles.
Oh, you're in L.A., okay. And you
at the rock and roll party.
Yes.
Huh.
Yes, and you weren't able to do the...
The mind reading.
That's right, because the music was so loud.
But it was a great presentation before then, wasn't it?
It was fabulous.
All right.
It was really, really good.
So you got to get Art to let me do a whole program on just... being able to do that kind of stuff.
Well, I did have a question.
Okay.
But it's about my grandmother. She's got Alzheimer's, and she's 92, and I don't know how to help let her know that it's okay for her to not stay here for us, that we're okay.
Well, what you do is you talk about it, but music and aromatherapy, if you just look, music therapy and aromatherapy, guided imagery, these are things that you can get. There are tapes, you know, people are producing these tapes, and, you know, Everett Franklin is doing one of these tapes that is about people being able to take this music and the rhythm and the tones and the sounds and being you there touching them, and you in your own heart and your own thoughts allowing them to let go. If you can let go, which is what you're explaining to me, that you really are ready and able to deal with it yourself. That's what you're telling me. Well, now, once you take that as that point, you look at the light things, touch, sense, fragrance, and sound. Because in Alzheimer's, it's the neurotransmitters that are blocking, and a lot of that has to do with lead and the water that we drink and the foods that we eat and the pesticides and that stuff. But what is happening is that person is spiritually connected, but the link between the mental and physical world is different from the emotional and spiritual world.
Right.
All right, so what you have to do is blend emotional and spiritual. Is she agitated?
Yes, she gets, all she wants to do is try to go home.
Well, but what you have to do is make sure you put her, you restrain her. That's it. You restrain it. Don't drive yourself crazy over restraining it. You put up with it, but you begin a series of fragrances, light fragrances, and music.
Yeah.
And you touch her. You give her that hold that your hand is there, that she feels the safety of your hand, and that it's, Mom, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Okay.
Music therapies. I like Stephen Halpern, but
yeah,
there's
really,
a lot of music.
Yeah, it would be different for different people, but like gold, there's something inherently spiritual about music. It'll be different things for different people, of course, but music is special in the same way
almost
gold is.
Art, I have a program that I'm doing with the guy in Colorado, and it's Perry, and it's using music and heartbeats for babies, crack babies and babies. I use it in adults and watch people in the VAs become calm, and it's a synchronized heartbeat with lullabies, just a simple repetition of lullabies.
Dan, I watched you kick people out of your hospital room and use music yourself for
and
hours. Hours on end, remember?
And music therapy. Yep. Sorry, Art. You're right. You got me.
Yeah. I watched him use it himself for hours on end. It was everybody out. I'm going to go to work on myself, and he did. He went to work on himself. Came out the other side somehow. All right, listen, when we get back, somebody is asking about suicide. So we'll ask.
Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, there really is something to music. Something more, I don't know, there's something about music. That's why I play it. I love it. It's part of my soul. And I expect part of yours, too. Well, all right. I guess there was supposed to be the crescendo of the end of the Mercials, and it would sound something like this. I mean, they're not always right. Machines are not always right. Dan, a number of people have fast blasted me, that means by the computer, wanting to know what, if anything, you know about the consequences of suicide.
Well, I know that it doesn't, there is no eternal damnation for it. Suicide is something that happens, Art. You know, it happens because sometimes chemistry in a person, but a lot of times the social nature by which they grow up. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people get depressed, and there's a lot of weird stuff that goes on in the world that leads to it. But there is no such thing as being punished on the other side for committing suicide. Most of those people, I think the worst thing that happens is you get a chance to look at the things that you could have accomplished. You know, Art, in that third near-death experience, when I went from the blue-gray place to the tunnel in the first tooth, I never saw anything in the blue-gray place.
Actually, you know, Dan, maybe that makes sense. If you had a life review, then maybe with the suicide, as you point out, the trauma would be seeing what you could have done.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be a trauma. I mean, you know, you made a decision. I'm not for euthanasia. I'm against suicide. I do not advocate suicide or euthanasia in any shape, form, or fashion, no matter how good I tell you it is on the other side, no matter how good anybody else tells you it is over there. You choose to come here, and you're chosen to come here. You've come for breath. Breathe in for you and out for spiritual unfoldment. And 25 years of studying the panoramic life of you and still watching the vision come true and still making it happen.
All right.
I can state that.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Daniel Brinkley. Hello.
Yes, this is Terrence from Morgan Hill, California. I'm listening on KSFO 560.
Hi, Terrence.
Hi, Terrence.
I was wondering about the cathedral that you visit. Is that on Sitchin's Nibiru, or is that on the heaven that the Anunnaki of Nibiru pray to?
Well, I think it's on the heaven level in that context. It's way past, it's mid-range astral plane.
It's
a mid-range. It doesn't reach the heavenly, the higher frequency, because as I finished the Crystal City, I can remember there were levels after that, you know, and those were the higher levels. These were, I probably went through four of these levels to get to the Crystal City and then to realize the vision that was being placed upon me, which was, I don't even know where that happened. It was just that me and that being of light that was not, that was one from the cathedral, and then coming back. But I, once I was there receiving the knowledge for the centers, I knew there were levels higher. So I'd say it would be in the upper astral plane, using the way that Zechariah does it and how people basically break it down in ancient religion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Daniel Brinkley. Good morning.
Good morning. Daniel.
Yes, sir.
I have a question, and but a quick comment since you brought up the Quebec meeting. You know, I think you're right about keeping a close eyeball on this. If you just do a quick search about the Free Trade Act, especially like within the last 3 or 4 months, and I'm not talking about going to conspiracy sites or anything like that, just AP and UPI stories, and see the flurry of activity that's been going on in South America, Mexico, and Canada to get these borders, you know, basically brought down.
And to get them to accept the dollar.
Yeah,
as the national currency, it's the exception of the United States dollar is the key they have to move. And
you got it.
Europe's in place. Look where Europe is, and they got to. This all has to happen before the Chinese figure out what they're going to do about the Asian countries.
You got that? No, really, this is something a little, that has a little bit more gravity than just, oh, it's just another NAFTA thing. No, this thing has teeth.
This is the big one.
I agree. And but my question is about the visions and, you know, the boxes.
Right.
There were a lot of them that had dates in them. They seemed to point like that some of this stuff was going to happen in the 90s and it never came. Is a timeline, is it like a timeline blur or something there?
Well, you know what? I keep sticking to the ones that didn't happen, which is probably, you know, when I look at it, it's like 15%.
I'm not trying to nail you or anything.
You don't have to nail me.
I'm not.
Well, let's say we were nailing me.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I could nail me, watch. Because I missed stuff. I was 25 years old.
Right.
And I was from Aiken, South Carolina, and I had seen enough of the world, and I'd probably been in 15 countries by then, or about 12 countries by then.
Right.
16 countries by then. And I knew the ropes. You know, I wasn't just some dummy. I'd been in the street, and I had seen a lot of stuff and perpetrated a lot of cosmic stuff, you know. Okay, so I had to have the mentality to even get as well as I did. And with the help of Paul Perry, I broke them down into boxes. It was like 321 things. And, you know, I wrote notebooks on this crap.
Right.
When I was trying to come out of it, and it would happen. And some of the times after the near-death experience in that next 7 months, I would visit all kinds of places. But what I wanted to do is to put it down in a book form, which was Saved by the Light, that I just stood the test of time.
Yeah, okay.
I couldn't interpret a lot of them. I can see things that I did that I could change now as I interpret it 25 years later, but I will stick with the 15% that I missed. I missed a date.
Hey,
like when I was talking about the Syrians and the Chinese.
Right.
Well, they built the AWACS airplane, and they're developing a what's called an 802C surface-to-land missile, which is probably as deadly as the finest launchable weapons or conventional close-range weapons, battle theater weapons. They got the best of it, and they were using the technology from the Israelis. It was reported.
Well, I'll tell you what, about that 15%, I'll tell you what, what you're seeing now, what we're seeing before our eyes now, I think that 15%, you're going to have 100% hit, because it's just, really, when you look at it, it's all coming to fruition. So do you see, shortly ahead of us, a real big bump before things get better?
Listen, by the time 2004 comes here, what we have right now, if I'm right, what we have right now is 18 months to really put in a way to dawn the millennium of who we are, to set the swive of compassion in action,
right.
And that we just dawn the millennium and set the mid-election terms of what's going on in this country. One senator, Strom Thurmond from here, and 7 or 8 congressmen, and set the issues and set it so that the midterm will truly determine the next president of the United States. And to do it across that 4-year pattern to put it all in place so that equal to when this planet's returning and the solar flare reaction, mm-hmm. which I'm a devotee to solar flares.
Yeah.
And as these things happen, this is our golden opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Danny.
All right. Thank you, and take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Danion Brinkley. Hello.
Hi. This is Dave from Columbia.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Danion.
How are you?
Fine.
Thanks for being up, and thanks for calling.
Oh, I work nights. This is what I do. So, nothing going on at the gas station. The reason I'm calling is that I was going to call on that suicide issue like you were talking about before. However, you kind of answered that. But the other thing I want to ask about is that, say, you said that there was machines in, like, South Africa, and what was the other place that they were?
In Germany.
East Germany to talk to the other side. Is this true?
Oh, absolutely. No
question. Okay.
And if an artifact,
what would really stop people from enjoying this corporeal existence that we have here and not just saying, whoops, well, it looks like it's better over there and I'm having a bad day, let's go.
Yeah.
Your inner spiritual self. Okay. Until you're a kid. Now, a lot of kids are killing themselves, and that's our fault. That's not their fault.
Right.
The kids are killing each other and shooting everybody. That responsibility belongs to every American that's 25 years and older. I mean, it's our responsibility.
Yeah, because we all feel it when it happens, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we feel it. It's like Columbine and just all that stuff, but it's a failure on our part. Those kids didn't fail anything. They are not villains or all that stuff. If you're under 18 years old, you might be crazy, but whatever's going on in you, there's something about that that we are responsible for.
Yeah.
All right, so, but I watch people in pain, so horrendous pain at the end of their life that it would be a mercy. It would be glorious. And I myself just hunt better chemistry to put that self person in a place that they can still deal with it.
I see.
You know, but death, you are a chosen spiritual being even in that damn gas station.
And you chose to come here,
and you were chosen to come here.
Yeah.
And what is the greatness about us is we endure. The style of character of the spiritual beings that we are as we enter this earth plane, our style is we can endure. And then maybe we were supposed to be gold miners, but we're some hellacious, powerful, mighty spiritual gold miners. And as we sit here tonight, suicide is out of the question, but no one is condemned for it. Only the best of the best even got here to start with. And the, what really goes wrong with us is we're not going to fail what we came here for. We're not going to fail that, but we have failed to find a system that we can recognize it is, which, in which we would call religions. And then we have to figure out what we want to do. You choose to come and they're chosen to come. And all my lectures and what I'm right about and what this next book, and I hope everybody waits for this next book. It'll be done. It's the last of the light books. And it's explaining all this stuff, Art. And then, you know, just Danion.com. But we have to get our job done and not judge anyone in suicide because that person just couldn't hack it or whatever it was that against them, they chose to leave. They don't get condemned for that. And we don't have to worry about that we're punishing ourselves because we're staying. This is our job, and we will get it done. And the time is now.
All right. About the machines.
Oh, yeah. As soon as you agree to do a program to experiment on them, we'll start talking about them. I believe, Art, that here comes a time in the next few months as they refine these two new machines, that what Casey predicted and what Edison spent his last days trying to figure out how to do was how to construct it, that these solar flares have created a magnetic pulse and a magnetic energy around the United, around the world, this Earth, and it'll hold here. And the quality of where these machines can tune, for the first time, it'll work, and I know it.
Hmm.
I know it will. And so I want to help merge this with the centers in a way that the fact that that other side exists and it differs in different levels, there is a way at the near-death experience that you can move deeper than those, but there are still ways here now that you can communicate and find your own reinforcement, and that's the joy of this next 4 years.
There's a lot of signs right now, Dan, that the other side is becoming more apparent without any machines at all around
exactly.
us. People are beginning to see some pretty strange things.
But look at the computer. But I've seen people lift out of their bodies sitting at the bedside. I've seen family members come get them. But for me, Art, because I'm there out of 296 times, I've probably seen something like this 15 times.
I got you. All right, Dan, hold on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
This is Diane in Sacramento.
Hello.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
I have a few questions or comments. When you were talking about suicide, I was wondering if people did reincarnate and have to live through a miserable life if they committed suicide to get out of the life they were in.
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't believe that. I've never had anything that reinforced reincarnation to me, except that being around people like Brian Weiss and watching certain channels and mediums and people who, and reading literature and Winifred Lucas about past life regression therapy and stuff that Raymond has done. This data, as I would look at it as Daniel Binkley, with what I know, would reinforce the fact that there are possible that you can come here more than once or twice. But I don't believe it's for all that sin and you always have to keep coming till you get it right.
Okay.
I just don't believe that is a part of it.
Well, that's good. Let me see now. There's speaking about mediums. I was just doing some fundraising and I happened to go by a business that it was a psychic reading business or something like that, fortune telling business. And she wanted me to go back. She wasn't there when I was there. And I was wondering if it's legitimate to go to mediums to see the other side or something.
Well, I mean, that's a matter of choice. Are there mediums who are capable of doing that? Absolutely. And do you have to be really careful? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm trying to create I have a place on this website called That Ain't Nothing. And it's just the way I talk. But
how do you discern?
I'm a great debunker, Art. I can watch them.
Yeah, that's how you do it. How does somebody like this lady or somebody else do
that? I can't answer that, Art. It's just too complex. You have to find a whole system that you're trusted in and you feel safe in. You know, you can't just go into anybody. I don't care if they're on TV or what they're doing. It's an environment that creates that intuitive and empathic connection. You know, I do that stuff all the time. I can go anywhere.
I know.
Talk to the dead.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Daniel Brinkley. Hello.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Daniel.
Hello, sir.
This is Ed in Iola, Texas. I listen to you on WTAW 1620 AM out of Bryan College Station.
Yes, sir.
Attaboy, Ed.
I'm a paper man. I'm out here 7 nights a week. I listen to this station every night, so I've enjoyed it tremendously over the last 2 years. Damien, have you ever done any research on the Coumadin that you're taking?
Yeah.
I had to do some research on it. I did back in 1990.
This crap will kill you, son.
Yeah, well, my wife damn near died from it.
It'll kill you. And I take 30 milligrams.
Yeah, Coumadin is poison.
It's a basic chemical in rat poison.
Yeah.
Decon.
Yeah.
And so I research it every which way. What I've really learned to enjoy, Ed, is I have found these two companies who produce this diagnostics machine that does an analysis, and I'm able to reduce the amount of Coumadin because they create this. It's just drops that I take. You know, Art, how I experiment with everything.
I know.
I will go and find it and sit down and set up as a stricter protocol and study as I can to watch me. And I have seen the side effects of the Coumadin be reduced because of these drops I put under my tongue. And this has been probably the most amazing thing that I have seen in the last 12 years on this side of the earth. So, Ed, I understand about being careful. Did you have a question about Coumadin? Or?
No, I just wonder, you know, they won't even give it to my wife anymore because they were giving her as small as she could and as they could, and she was hemorrhaging internally. She liked to die.
That's what happened to me when I had the third near-death experience.
Yeah.
Yep. In the brain, yeah.
Yeah. But Art, remember, those worlds, what I want to talk about sometime is the worlds that are being created. You know, people look for purgatory. In that blue-gray place in the third near-death experience because of prayer, Art, I slowed down. There was a slowing of my vibration, and so as I moved from the blue-gray place to the tunnel, I discovered that there are worlds that exist there. Remember, I used to be so frantic trying to figure out how to say this.
I do.
We are creating levels, Art, of places where people are getting trapped, like Sarah. Remember Sarah and going through
these places? I will never, ever forget Sarah.
Well, I think that Sarah, when I had the third near-death experience, those levels of consciousness that exist that people can get trapped in and not go through the tunnel like I did twice, they can get trapped in exist. And it explains so much of what I would have never believed. I mean, sometimes when we have time to get to that, or
I'm gonna bring Sarah's NDE back and play it again on the air. I'm gonna get
absolutely
to dig it up for me. Listen, Dan.
Yep.
We're out of time. So, Danion Brinkley, P.O. Box 1919, Aiken. That's AIKEN, South Carolina. Zip code 29802. One more time, P.O. Box 1919, Aiken, South Carolina, 29802. And your email address is danion@mailexcel.com, right?
Yep, danion.com.
And, of course, your website at danion.com. All right, my friend, we have done it. You made it all the way through.
All right, thanks. And next week is National Volunteer Week, so everybody volunteer and help someone. And, Art, thanks, and have me back sometime.
Say goodnight, Dan.
Good night, everybody, and good night, Bulldog.
There you are.
Bye.
See you later. That's Danion Brinkley, and there's his story for you. All right, folks, that's it. Tomorrow night is Open Lines, and we're going to, I don't know, we'll just fool around with all kinds of things. A typical Friday night, Saturday morning, or maybe there's no such thing as typical here. I don't know. But that's it for tonight from the high desert, where the winds bloweth. I'm Art Bell, and I'm going to bloweth a way out of here. Ta-ta.